Tonight on The Download, from the Q Brothers, GQ. Chicago producer and sound engineer, CB Mix. And another episode of The Swap Meet with Greg Lamb. Now, here's your host, a man who met behind closed doors today to come up with this intro, Justin Kaufman.
You know what? We met. We had two breaks. We decided that we were going to keep meeting until we figure out what's right for the intro. It's just a process, and we don't believe in transparency. We just believe in good intros. Compromised, but good. I'm not talking about intros. You got me. Talking about Springfield, of course. What a day today. It was supposed to be a day that the override of the veto was supposed to be voted on in the House. But as we heard yesterday, Speaker Madigan said, you know what? We'll just meet as leaders behind closed doors, hammer this out, figure it out at a different time when there aren't so many people looking at us. You know, when people are interested in government. Anyway. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is a download with till 11 o'clock. Mike Fouché is coming up at 7:30 tonight. He joins us every week to talk politics, Springfield, Cook County, Chicago. I got to ask Mike about this because it feels like there should have been lessons that were learned from the budget fiasco that just happened over the past 3 years here in the state of Illinois. And yet we're in the situation where it just seems once again that we're repeating it. And now there's just no transparency. Now we're gonna close these big oak doors. We'll handle it. We'll handle it. Oh, you guys are gonna handle it? Oh, great. You four? Oh yeah. I forgot how good you are at this. All right, I digress. It's a download here with till 11 o'clock tonight on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a great show lined up. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we are going to welcome back two performers, Anthony Mosley and GQ, both from the Peace Book Festival. This is the second annual Peace Book Festival, which is a great festival for peace that creates theater around the idea of peace, the idea of nonviolence, and brings it to different neighborhoods around Chicago throughout the fall. It's starting, the first performance is this Saturday at the Goodman Theater. And GQ has teamed up with a man named Tyrone Taylor. And Tyrone Taylor, they're both working on a piece that's going to be premiered called 17 to New Life. And it's about Tyrone's story. Tyrone, a kid from the Bronx who, as a young 17-year-old, was robbing cabs, doing bad stuff. It went wrong. Tyrone shot a Pakistani cab driver, killed him, got 17 years, or from 17, got 17 to life. And this is his story. And so Tyrone Taylor in studio tonight, along with GQ and Anthony Mosley, to talk about not only murder, incarceration, but transformation. And, of course, the whole point of the Peace Book Festival, peace. So we'll talk with Tyrone, GQ, and Anthony Mosley at the big table tonight. Here on the download, coming up at 9 o'clock, CB Mix talking to Roe a little bit off air. It's very excited to have CB Mix. CB Mix is Chris Barnett. Chris Barnett is a producer, sound engineer in Chicago. Who, and I'm very excited about this, is a guy who not only produced on Coloring Book, the Grammy Award winning album from Chance the Rapper, but he also produces a lot of Chief Keef stuff. Chief Keef, the controversial rapper who used to be on the South Side, now lives in Los Angeles. Chris Barnett does a lot of the mixing, a lot of the sound, a lot of the producing of the music, and he's going to be in studio tonight to talk about drill, talk about Chicago hip-hop, but also to talk about his roots. His kid from the Northwest suburbs comes down, has a chance to be at the epicenter of this music that is really, truly capturing a nation. So we'll talk with Chris Barnett, CB Mix, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And tonight at 10 o'clock, very excited, Greg Flam is back. The Swap Meet, 312-981-7200. If you got that junk that you're thinking about throwing out, maybe, you know, it's the end of the garage sale season here. Perhaps, possibly you got a gem. You know, instead of just throwing that in the 10 cents and under bin, maybe that Star Wars guy that you've been holding on, maybe that Kenner, some learning, it might be worth something. Well, Greg Flamm knows. 312-981-7200. That's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, Nesmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right. Take a break. We'll come back. We'll carry out. Stay with us. That's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. All right, here today's top stories. President Trump continues his yo-yo tour of inclusive divisive, which is the 2017 version of flip-flopping. Last night, he went hard at his enemies and the press. And today, he said he wanted to bring the country together. You know, as one does the next morning after a big argument. Honey, can we forget about last night? I was drunk. I said stuff. We both did, but I said more. I shouldn't have. Here, you know what? I wrote down some thoughts. Unity. But last night, the president seemed to suggest that if Congress did not improve funding for his wall along the Mexican border, he would shut down the government. Oof. Well, that's one way to unify the country. Hold it hostage. Yes, whatever you say. Hillary Clinton's telling everyone how she felt in the debate. She said Trump made her skin crawl and he was creeped out. And I was just thinking, man, I wonder when we can talk about the 2016 presidential debates again. Right? I mean, it's just been way too long. It's a big old pass. You know, pass on the Hillary Clinton book. Springfield's gone dark. Essentially, the leaders are meeting behind closed doors to work out a compromise to get SB1 passed through the House. The newspapers, particularly the Sun-Times, aren't happy with the lack of transparency, suggesting that if you're going to give tax credits to families for private schools, aka Catholic schools, then this should be debated on the floor of the State House, not crafted in secrecy. Right? Interesting concept. Wow. Government out in the open? Wow. Jeez. So 2.0. Maybe the robots will govern out of this, out in the open like this. But right now, us humans, we do it the old-fashioned way, in secret, with tons of little-known perks for our friends, colleagues, and lobbyists. I mean, that's what we do. Been doing it for years. I think Thomas Jefferson's writing stuff out in the open. No, they closed those doors when they made the Declaration of Independence. Behind closed doors. A student at Moraine Valley Community College is suing over free speech rights after he was denied registration after an incident in a class where, while improvising, the student played a pimp and verbally mistreated a female scene partner. In other words, he was a pimp. But the student says that these were assigned characters and they were acting out a pimp/sex worker scenario, as one does in a community college. The suit says he's covered by free speech, but at the same time, the college felt his word choice in the improv was inappropriate. So my takeaways on this story, don't do improv ever. But if you have to do improv in a college class and you're assigned the character pimp, maybe don't go all Meisner on him, right? The reluctant pimp would probably get you a B, and you could stay at the school. Weird case. Still a lot of questions, right? Please tell me this was like an economics class and there was no reason for them to be doing improv. That's what I just want to get to. So many questions. In weather, another beauty. I think the eclipse may have changed the weather pattern forever. Cloudy, sunny till the snows come in December. You watch. You watch. In sports, the Cubs continue to be the top story as they climb closer to clinching another playoff berth. They did what they were supposed to last night, beating up on the Reds, and they are up 7-0 in the fourth inning. As we speak, in like an instant, too. You know what I mean? That's what I love about this team. They could, boom, boom, 7 runs, boom, 12 runs. It helped that the Cardinals lost, too, and today the Brewers lost. So right now they have a 3-game lead on the Brew Crew, 4.5 on the fading Cards. Wow. This is stretching the lead. Scary moment, though. Chris Bryan hurt his hand again. This dude hurts his hand every 2 weeks. Bryant was taken out of the game last night. Anthony Rizzo played third. Rizzo, or as I like to call him, New Penguin. He did okay at the hot corner. To be fair, no plays came his way, but still, Gold Glove. He's the first left-handed baseball player since 1901 to play first, second, and third in 1 year. So there's that. The Sox christened the Giolito era last night with a 4-1 loss, a highly touted prospect. Gave up 4 runs in his debut. He didn't seem to be lights out, and he wasn't shellacked like Carson Fulmer, so a strong number four in the rotation, maybe? I mean, he's right between, say, a John Lackey and an Eddie Butler, right? Somewhere right in there. So there you have it, Sox fans. But you know what? He'll get better. So, okay, who's next? Right? The Sox should just do a promotion where they promote a prospect every game for the rest of the season. Bobbleheads, little bats, calendars galore, right? Because right now we're already bored. Like, no prospect. James Shield. Call me when they bring up that left fielder. I don't know which one, just one of them. But have no fear, White Sox fans. The Bears are about to start up for real. And today we saw an interesting development. Quarterback Mitch Trubisky took some snaps with the number one unit. So far, he's been relegated to playing with the backups. Coach Fox went out of his way to say nothing's changed. But this is what we wanted to see. Here, put Trubisky out there with the number ones on Sunday. If he's terrible, then we respect your approach. If he tears it up, then we're excited about Bears football. It's a win-win for everybody, including the organization. And you kind of have to since the Browns announced today. The Browns! They announced that they're starting rookie DeShone Kizer. And frankly, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Andrew Luck, Carson Wentz, and every other high draft pick has started as a rookie. So if you could play, start him. Left tackle Charles Leno Jr. signed an extension today. What? I thought Hogue was on here. They must really like his numbers in practice. Because it can't be the play. Leno Jr. was in a contract year, so the thought was to let him play for the cash, see if he's got, you know, if he's someone to hold on to for the future. But the Bears think he's the one, and they signed him. I guess he was pretty good at stretching at camp. They're like, that's a great stretch. Let's give him 3 years. I had a chance to look at the trade between the Cavs and the Celtics, and the Celtics gave up, listen to this, Isaiah Thomas, all-star, Jay Crowder, serviceable, another guy, he'll be cut, right? And an unprotected first-round pick from the Brooklyn Nets, which would mean that the Cavs would have a lottery pick from this trade, all for one guy, Kyrie Irving. So why am I mentioning this? What does that mean for us here in Chicago? Well, it means that we had a Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler, and we traded him for way less, right? No all-stars, no lottery picks, nothing. So what's up? I mean, is there really that much of a discrepancy between Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler? I don't think so. Also, ESPN reporting that the young Bulls players don't particularly like Dwayne Wade, which may be why they're looking to buy out that contract. I mean, what's not to like? The velour green sweatsuit? The sport coat without arms? The capri pants with no socks and dress shoes? This kid's just be hating. We should keep D-Wade just so he can show up in fashion magazines. Oh, we didn't make it to ESPN magazine, but we did make it to Elle. Take a look. D-Wade's got cool pants on. And finally tonight, the hashtag turns 10 years old, or 50 if you count the pound symbol on the telephone. The hashtag was invented in 2007. Okay, then. But I don't understand the USA Today headline that said, "Want to feel old? This is the first tweet with a hashtag." I clicked through expecting to feel old, but there's no hashtag Linkin Park or hashtag Kellis or hashtag Fred Kloss, hashtag Barry Bonds juicing, hashtag Apple should invent an iPhone. No, it was hashtag bar camp. Why would that hashtag make me feel old? Also, hard to imagine whether those campers would have ever learned how to make a mint julep without this advanced technology. But seriously, what's nostalgic about hashtag bar camp? You really want to feel old? The crime in the first Fast and the Furious movie was a truck full of combo TV / VCRs. Hashtag VHS. And there you go. That's the carry out for August 23rd, 2017. Hashtag napkins in the bag. All right, coming up, Mike Fouché is going to join us. We'll talk about the closed-door sessions in Springfield over school funding and whether or not we're going to see any change to SB1. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well, my friend. You know, once I finally learned that the pound sign was now called a hashtag, I advanced to the nifty little equal sign with a slash through it. That means if you retweet, you're not necessarily endorsing the tweet.
Oh. So, you should teach a class on this.
Welcome, students.
You should be the WGN guy who does social media.
To Martyr Homeschooling. We're going to go through our
hashtag and gym, right?
Twitter basics right now. Men, do not use emojis when tweeting. You'll be ridiculed.
That's perfect.
A buddy of mine replied to a tweet. It was months ago, and used an emoji.
Yeah.
And I called him. I said, "What are you doing?
Yeah.
Don't do that."
That's almost as bad as the cryptic "something's going on in my life" Facebook post. Wish days got better than today. A sad face. I'll bite. What's up?
Well, you know, hey, look, all three of us are married. Right. We get those cryptic text messages every day.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me, as he is every Wednesday night. Mike Fouché.
You.
From The Daily Line. You can find it at dailyline.net. Of course, Aldercast, which is the podcast, comes out Fridays here at WGN+.
Yeah, we had an amazing interview of State Senator Sam McCann this last week, who's a Central Illinois State Senator, Republican, who voted for the budget. And, man, he says some really tough things.
Oh, find it. You can find it at WGN+. Here on the WGN radio site. All right, Mike, let's talk about Springfield this week. This was supposed to be the week. Last week, the can was kicked down the road, and for a week at least. And Speaker Madigan said that today would be the day that they would vote on an override. Yesterday, late in the afternoon, he said...
In the evening.
He said, you know what? We got some more meetings to do. Table that.
Yeah, that was a bummer for me because I was on my way to Springfield at the moment when they announced that. I was on the train, so I had to hang out for the night and then come back this morning. And there were a lot of other people like that, too. I don't know who it is, but I keep hearing a story about at least one member of the House who broke his vacation in California and flew back. A couple of people keep saying, there's some guy. I'm like, well, you know, I got to figure out who that is. But so definitely, you know, it was an inconvenience for a lot of people.
Why did they not do the vote today?
Basically, the long and the short of it is that Mike Madigan doesn't have enough votes in order to pass an override in the House. And they need 71 votes. Really, I think the most I heard that they could get to was 67. There's Democrats that don't want to vote for it. And there are, you know, Republicans don't want to vote for it. And the problem is, and really had an amazing quote from Representative Sam Yingling last night, who is from up by Round Lake, Grays Lake area. And he's a Democrat. And he said, look, you know, there's been a ton of money, millions spent by the Illinois Policy Institute in order to weaponize the name SB1. So if anybody votes for SB1, the immediate thinking in the suburbs like his up by Grays Lake or elsewhere in the state,
it becomes a campaign issue.
It becomes a campaign issue. You're talking about it being a Chicago bailout. And so regardless of all the things that are in it, it just becomes a huge, huge weight for most Republicans. So what's interesting is that, okay, we've been talking about SB1 all this time. Well, last time when the Senate last met, when they had their special meeting a few weeks ago, they passed a bill and sent it back to the House, what we're calling an understudy, which basically has all the same stuff as SB1, which is HB 61 or 3163, HB 3163. And that one basically is just ready and waiting for the House to pick up and then do whatever it is that they want to do in order to have another bill that can, you know, do any negotiations or any changes in order to get
it. So if they can't get the vote, then they just reintroduce a new bill and start from scratch.
And that's waiting. It's in the hopper and it's waiting for somebody to start.
But let me ask you, Mike, I mean, at a certain point, what needs to change in SB1 to get the support of Democrats and Republicans that you mentioned that aren't in support of it now?
The first thing that needs to change is that it can't be called SB1 anymore. Right. I mean, which is really bogus and stupid, but this is really the way that people are thinking. The second thing that needs to happen, likely, is that there's going to be some sort of education mandate relief. The lead Republican Senate negotiator, Senator Jason Barrickman, has been really, really pushing for schools to not have to do all different kinds of mandated things like spending on special education, you know, spending on all different kinds of class kind of things. And then the other thing that everyone, all the Republicans really seem to want is to get rid of the Chicago pension payment, not the huge block grant, but this big $250 million pension payment. And whether that is taken out of this and done as a separate measure, you know, maybe that could pass as a separate measure. And
do you see that happening, though? Because this is
what, I don't know.
All of this argument is around that.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, I think that in a lot of ways, there's a lot of goofy, weird stuff about how things are in Springfield. And I think that people would be willing to vote on it if it was a separate thing and they could stand or die on it, you know. And so then the third is this whole idea of education vouchers.
And this is what we've been hearing about in the last couple of days. The idea that behind closed doors, one of the issues that's on the table, and we hinted to this a couple weeks back, is that there's a tax credit for people who would send their kids to private schools.
Right.
They would get essentially a tax credit from the state, which amounts to public funding.
Right. And, you know, so this is still very much up in the air. So you can't really say this is what it is that they're talking about specifically, but they've talked about it being for a 4-year period and it would be sunsetted. They've talked about it being capped at the amount of money. The one talk is $50 million a year, another $75 million a year, another is $100 million a year. So if you're the first group of people in order to get in, you know, it runs out of money at some point. There's no more money for that particular tax credit. So, you know, who knows? I think that, you know, really, 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 that there is beginning to be some serious desperation in the air. I mean, what's amazing is for a lot of these smaller school districts around the state
that have started and
started a few weeks ago. There are these school districts that have, like, you know, 1,200 kids from K-12. Just wrap your brain around that in Southern Illinois, and they can't borrow. You know, they don't have enough money in order to really get them through October.
Then there was a deadline that was thrown out by Speaker Madigan saying the end of, I think it was the 29th or something.
28th, Tuesday.
Are they going to adhere to that deadline, or are we doing budget politics where deadlines don't matter?
No, it matters because statutorily you have to be able to take action on a veto override by a certain number of days.
So he's got a week to do the veto override. Right.
No, it's not a week. It's
or whenever
Monday.
6 days from
now. It's Monday. And so they met for 6 hours last night. They're supposed to, the leaders, the caucus leaders, the House.
Tomorrow in Chicago, right?
Tomorrow in Chicago. And so, you know, I'm going to bet that they're probably going to meet again through the weekend and they're going to forge some kind of a deal. And what we'll see is that SB1 will be dead and then they'll pick up this understudy bill. And
let's take a quick break so we can stay on time. And I don't want to talk to you. I mean, if you could do a service to me and to the listeners, to the pros and cons of which has been a tremendous fight at the national education level when it comes to school vouchers and private funding.
Right.
I lose understanding of that. But I want to get just sort of a simple what's the pro and what's the con. We come back from
as
break.
A service to you.
As a I service to
that.
Me. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you. Mike Boucher from the Daily Line. Stay with us. Mike Boucher in studio tonight on the download. We're talking about school funding now. And I also want to talk about the Justice Department, the consent decree, and the police and Mayor Emanuel.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of time. But when we're talking about tax credits to private schools.
Right.
What do we mean?
Well, the tax credits go to the individuals who send their kids to private schools.
So this has been an argument in education for years. But it's this idea that whether or not we should be using taxpayer money to subsidize students going to private schools.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is that what you're doing is you're no longer making people who send their kids to private schools also have to pay for the people whose kids are going to public schools. So there's two different ways of looking at it. The advantage, people say, on the pro voucher side is that you're helping to support schools that probably have higher quality. People can choose where it is that they want to send their schools. There's more flexibility. You can go to different places. And so you have a thriving marketplace of different schools, right? And then on the people who are against vouchers, what you're saying is that, well, in order to have a strong education system, you have to have a lot of people that are paying into a pool. and it's almost like an insurance pool. Mm-hmm. And when you start withdrawing that money from the system, then the whole education system begins to collapse, and that there's a certain point at which you no longer have enough money for a public school system that it can be sustainable. And that amount of money, you know, it's debatable.
And this is something exactly that we're seeing when we say private schools. I have in my mind private schools. I think of schools in Chicago, of course.
Right.
But we're really talking about Catholic schools.
We're really talking about, well, Catholic schools.
Or other religious schools. Yeah.
We're talking about, yeah.
Because I was surprised to hear the Cardinal's name thrown about in these private
Cardinal
meetings.
Cardinal Cipich has been personally lobbying for this with Governor Rauner and others. But, and you know, what's interesting is that this really isn't necessarily a party line issue. I actually spent a lot of time talking on the phone with former Republican state representative Roger Eddy, who was also a school superintendent downstate, and now he's the president of the Illinois School Board Association. And Roger Eddy, you know, was telling me, look, you know, there's a lot of Republicans that are not crazy about the idea of vouchers because they're concerned that their school districts are going to have trouble, and that if somebody wants to be able to pay for private school, that should be an extra amount of money that they're willing to fork over.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I don't want to simplify this, but it seems like that's the way the world works. If you here's the taxpayers' schools that are provided. If you want to send your kids to something that's more specialized or possibly a better school, it's going to cost you money.
Right. I mean, you could say, well, you know, the government will provide you a road to drive on, but if you want to take a helicopter, you got to pay for all that other helicopter stuff.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I think that that's a valid argument.
Well, it just seems to be the argument that's played out, and I'm willing to listen to the idea that, you know, because I wonder what falls under the word private, because you have religious schools, just
right,
always been here in the Chicago area in the state of
right.
Illinois. Do charter schools fall into that category? Do
no.
No. So these are
because
private schools.
Because charter
schools
have like a charter with the public school.
So this is
system.
Mainly really about religious schools.
For the most part.
And the higher end
and
schools
the smaller,
that are private. Yeah.
Small number of places, you know, like Royce Moore and Latin School and places like that.
Why do people on the side of school choice, I mean, what's their thought? I mean, does it come down to the ugly side where it's just about, hey, I don't want my kids to go to a public school because you know, the school's run down, it's a neighborhood school, and I just feel like
part of it,
all the stereotypes that go along
it,
with
I think people,
public schools.
I think people have a problem with that. You know, I have people in my family who send their children to Catholic school because they really value the Catholic education and they want to have that particular kind of education for their kids. Mm-hmm. And the only way to really get it is by sending them to school. But I think the argument from a lot of people that are in the pro-voucher side is, again, look, you know, you are able to create this marketplace of different schools where people can go, and you give them an ability to go somewhere else that is not mandated for them. And sometimes what it is that's mandated for them isn't enough,
yeah.
Or can't do what it is that you want.
All right. I want to make a real quick transition because this story is a huge one, and we don't have a lot of time, so we promise we'll get into it when we get back after Labor Day. But the consent decree argument, the Chicago Police Department and the Justice Department, the mayor's office, this has become a soap opera drama.
Well, there's two things going on with this. On the one hand, there's the city is supposed to be negotiating a memorandum of agreement with the Justice Department about how the city is going to be reforming the police department.
This was after we saw the big dog and
pony
show.
This was all done
in
January. This
right,
was all
right.
agreed in January. Well, at the same time, the mayor has been publicly, Mayor Emanuel has been publicly yelling and screaming at U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, you know, saying what a jerk you are, you don't know anything about immigration and all these other things. And Sessions has been doing the same towards Emanuel. So are these people that are actually negotiating an MOA? I mean, you know,
right.
And clearly it doesn't seem like they actually are.
But this plays a little bit into the thought that Mayor Emanuel doesn't want a consent decree, doesn't want the Justice Department. It was great show to be able to get on front of the podium and say we're going to change the way it's done.
Right.
But
and he doesn't want any kind of agreement. And so there is a private group of citizens, some from Black Lives Matter, some from the Urban League, and a bunch of other places, a group from University of Chicago, who have sued the city. And they say that there's a pattern and practice of bad police practices in the city. They've sued the city demanding a consent decree. Now, this has been done before. Actually, in Oakland, there was a private group that sued the city of Oakland and forced the city to have a consent decree on that. So the city on Monday then put out their motion to dismiss this, saying, you know, you guys are ridiculous. You know, we've got reform in hand already. So it's going to go to court.
Fascinating to watch. Yeah. I mean, this is the beginning of what could be a big
years,
story.
Years yeah. long.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line joins us every Wednesday night here. You can check out the Aldercast and WGN Plus. It comes out every Friday. Check out the one that just came out on Friday. Good stuff.
Yeah, great to be here.
Mike, great to see you, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, Chicago producer and sound engineer CB Mix, Chris Barnett. Chris goes by the name CB Mix, and he is a producer for artists in Chicago, hip-hop artists like Chance the Rapper, Vic Mensa, and Chief Keef.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good combo, right?
But yeah.
CB Mix did the track Mixtape on Coloring Book, the Chance the Rapper album that just came out. So Chris Barnett, CB Mix will be in studio in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, coming up this Saturday at the Goodman Theater, Collaboraction kicks off this year's Peace Book Festival. It's the second annual festival that features over 250 artists performing 24 world premieres. Those all at the Goodman. Then it hits select Chicago neighborhoods this fall, including neighborhoods like Austin, Uptown, Inglewood. The goal, of course, to promote peace. This year, one of the big performances is called 17 to New Life. It's a theater piece featuring the real-life story of Tyrone Taylor. Taylor was in prison for over 20 years after a robbery went south. Taylor's story includes murder, incarceration, freedom, and search for transformation. The piece is co-created for the stage by GQ, one of the Q brothers. GQ is a Chicago product who's performed on stage and screen from Broadway with his hit show Bombity of Errors to the screen, acting in the movie Drumline. He's one of the featured artists for this year's Peace Book Festival, one that starts this Saturday and continues in select neighborhoods throughout the fall. GQ's back in studio tonight, along with Peace Book creator and artistic director Anthony Mosley, and from New York, flown in today, Tyrone Taylor. Guys, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, man.
Good to see you all. Again.
Great to be here.
Anthony, why don't we start with you? This is the second annual Peace Book Festival. It's a little bit different in the way that it's set up this year. But talk about what we can expect from this year's festival and the success off the successes of last year.
You know, we want to be a vehicle for Chicago artists to come together, create important healing work about the most important issue of our times, which is our violence, our epidemic of inequity, and the systemic racism that supports it all. So we have 24 world premiere short pieces of theater, dance, and spoken word about peace in Chicago premiering at the Goodman Theater this Saturday. The Goodman has graciously opened up the Owen Theater to our over 200 artists, and we have 4.5 hours of theater. It is free for everyone, and there's just incredible pieces with artists from Englewood, Austin, and Hermosa, our three touring locations, but throughout the city. And then we have some really special collaborations happening that are...
I remember you came in, we talked about this last year, just about why there was a need for this festival. And you kind of hit on it right at the beginning, this idea that, you know, this is the artistic community's response to something that sometimes the news talks about, sometimes it doesn't. But the fact that Chicago right now is seeing, once again, a terrible year for gun violence.
Things are going the wrong direction, and this is not normal. But we live here. We don't see it, you know. In my wife's play, Levana Madrid, she said... Chicago is a city of neighborhoods. It sounds like it belongs on a brochure. What right. it really means is you stay in your neighborhood and I stay in mine. We have these invisible lines that stop resources and love and hope from flowing freely. And people have benefited greatly by this. And we think theater and art and music and dance, the things that Chicago is most well known for, creating jazz and blues and house music and our comedy and our storytelling, our greatest natural asset needs to be brought to our most important issue. And we want to wake people up, including white Chicago. You know, the blinders have been put on by the onslaught of media attention and the overwhelming feelings of what can I possibly do? We all got to find what we can do.
You know, Collaboration has been a great theater company in Chicago for decades now.
22 years.
22 years. Congratulations.
Peace Book starts our 22nd.
Well, I mean, Peace Book is not necessarily a departure, but it's definitely a different direction. Collaboration for a long time from the sketchbook and the other shows, it was really about showcasing the art of Chicagoans and Chicago theater. But in the last couple of years, you guys have changed direction to say, you know what, social justice issues that are affecting our community, those are where we want to be. Do we want to be in that space? Why the change?
Well, technology has been a big part of it. You know, you can stories are best now experienced through your phone or on your laptop. Theater is the place where we can come together, share time and space, and transform ourselves. You know, the word theater comes from the Greek, meaning the seeing place. And we think we can be a transformative experience. We are the greatest theater city, at least in the Americas. And how can we all, we have the heart. The city has the heart and soul. How can we not access that heart and soul? It needs to be spread. And we think theater and art can do it. And when you listen to stories like the one that GQ and Tyrone are going to talk about, this is not a play. This is real life. This is Tyrone's story. And it's about healing and forgiveness. And these are the kind of stories that need to be dominating our news thread, not about the alt-right and their miniature protests around the country, because that's a distraction. We have a slow genocide here in our city, and we need everybody.
Let me bring GQ in. GQ, this would be your second year. You worked last year. You did a piece for Peace Book. Talk about why you're involved in this. What is it about this work that that brings you back and resonates with you?
Well, you know, I guess being born and raised here, and then having lived in New York for 5 years, LA for 10 years, and spending the better half of the past 7 years traveling the world, I feel like, you know, being home, like, how do I use my art to better the quality of my life in my actual home, where my family lives, where the people who helped raise me are, you know? And I feel, you know, everyone from Chicago seems to have a strong connection to our city because we have Chicago pride, right?
Right.
So I definitely wanted to be involved in the arts more in this city, but something had happened in my life, sort of a transformation of priorities where, I wanted to develop my spiritual side a lot more and consciously choose, to put myself in positions where I would grow as a human, not just as an actor or a writer or a director.
Is that something that, I mean, that's a fascinating concept. I mean, because I think a lot of people listening right now probably have moments in their life where they think they want to reexamine their priorities or change the way they're living their life. I mean, is that something that's an external force that happens to you? Like not unlike what happened to Tyrone. We'll talk about that story. Or is it something that's internal that's more spiritual? It says, you know, I'm sick of the life I'm living. I want to do something different.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think everything that is considered quote unquote external is actually a symbol for what's happening internally. And so that's how Tyrone and I actually connected on this level of conversation in the first 20 seconds we met. And I think that on that level of form, the piece that we've created is a symbol for the healing, not only of Tyrone, but the healing of the world. The healing of the victim, healing of my own self, GQ, who had nothing, quote unquote, nothing to do with that story. I don't know why we were brought together, and I don't really ask why anymore. Things just kind of reveal themselves.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break, and let's bring Tyrone into conversation. We'll talk about the story you guys are going to perform, but also the genesis of that story, the real story of Tyrone's life. Tyrone Taylor in studio, GQ, Anthony Mosley. We'll continue the conversation here about the Peace Book Festival, which starts at the Goodman Theater. Three different shows. It's 3, 5, 30, and 8. Is that right?
Yep.
On free shows at the Goodman this Saturday, and then, of course, a tour in the fall of the Peace Book Festival. It's the download here on 720. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Anthony Mosley, GQ, and Tyrone Taylor. They are all members of the Peace Book Festival, which is at the Goodman Theater coming up on Saturday. It's a second annual festival with a goal to promote peace in Chicago, to really take head-on the issue of violence in this town, to be able to bring together over 250 artists to be able to perform and express themselves when it comes to the issues at hand. It's at the Goodman Theater, 3, 5:30, and 8 o'clock, free shows, and it's going to be on tour this fall, different select neighborhoods in the Chicago area. All right, I want to bring in Tyrone Taylor. Tyrone is one of the creators of the piece 17 to New Life, which will be on stage at the Goodman Theater coming up on Saturday. Tyrone, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Kind
of, you
Thank
flew
you
in.
For
you're,
having
you're from
me.
New York City or New York.
Yes, it's born and raised.
It's a Chicago conversation. But what, I mean, let's talk about this because you met GQ. How did this project come about?
Well, when I was in prison, I was introduced to him when he was performed at the Shakespeare at the Globe Theater, and by a director by the name of Steve Rowland. And he brought in about a few pieces of all the plays that were being done there. However, you know, we were young and, you know, we are into hip hop. So we gravitated towards the Othello the Remix. We mm-hmm. liked that one the best. And
that's the Q Brothers piece, right?
Definitely. And when we all got out, the rest of my theater company, Steve asked us if he had tickets to the show, and he said, would y'all like to go? And, you know, we said, yeah, we was all with it, you know. And we went to see the show live, because we had already seen it when it was taped. And, like, once again, we were just blown away, you know, by their performance. And after the show, a few of us, we went out to eat. And me and G, we just talked and, you know, and kicked it. And we just connected on so many levels. And we said that we need to work together one day. And we exchanged information. And then G was asked by Anthony to do this, Peace Book again.
Yeah.
And it's funny because at the same time that he was asked by Anthony to do it and wondering what he's going to do, I was texting him saying, what's up? When are we going to work together?
Within the same hour.
That's how it works.
Yeah. All
right, well, this is a story, and we're going to hear the performance in the second half here, but this is a performance that's centered around your life. I mean, this is about your story, and I kind of said in the beginning, in the lead, I said, you know, we're in prison for over 20 years for a robbery that went south. I mean, talk about that. I mean, we're going to hear it in the piece, but the idea of, I mean, is that accurate, what I said?
Yeah, it's very accurate. This is my story. This is real life. This is not a play. Prison is not a play. It's nothing to play with. But 17 to New Life is about a 17-year-old youth who strayed away from home and the values that he was taught by his mother and grandmother, didn't have no father in the household, didn't have any male positive role models in his life, and he gravitated towards street people, street life, and was influenced by them, and he started to do bad things, live a negative lifestyle, and got a gun, you know, and was selling drugs. But he was more into robbing, doing robberies, and he chose to rob cab drivers. And it just one robbery, and it wasn't the robbery that I was arrested for. It went bad. And it's funny, I was just telling G today that it's like a ghetto Shakespeare tragedy, because it hopefully it ends in a good ending, you know, but the story ends in a bad ending. Yeah. And no matter how far it goes from here, you know, it's still a sad story.
Let me ask you, you know, take us back to being 17 years old. And when you're in that situation, before it goes south, before it goes bad, before prison and everything that goes into that, do you recognize the severity of the life that you're living? Do you recognize in the moment as a 17-year-old kid that being a stick-up guy who's robbing cab drivers, that you want to find a way out? Or how does it – how talk about your mental space at 17 years old in New York City robbing cab drivers.
Well, of course, it's a mental state that it didn't happen overnight. You know, it took time. Just the way it took time for me to change and transform to get my life back together. There were a lot of things that not only myself, but many youths that their lives go bad, that they make the wrong decisions, right. Make, you know, bad mistakes, that they were lacking something. You know, like I said, I didn't have a father in my life. So I lacked that. I didn't have that guidance. So I had so much energy and I didn't know how to channel it. And it just consumed me and took over me. And of course, you don't know what you actually, the magnitude that you're doing. You don't know. Because right. if I did, I wouldn't be doing it. I would have stopped.
Right.
But I didn't. And you know, it was something that it was ongoing that I kept doing. And like I said, even after that situation, I still kept on doing it. I still kept on robbing cab drivers.
And this is decades ago now. But the story does take place where, and GQ, you play the cab driver in the piece, and this is a situation where a robbery does go south, and you shoot a cab driver.
Right.
And inevitably go to jail for it.
And I spend more time in jail than I did in the street.
I mean, and in prison, when we talk about that story, and you know, of course, when you have to be on stage to tell that story, you know, what was it like? I mean, I know it's such a generic question, it's so big and wide, but I mean, for a kid who was 17 years old, 18 year old, going into prison to do a life sentence,
and that's basically what it is, because I didn't have, when you have life, when you have those four letters, that means that they could hold you forever. They don't have to let you go. But I'm just grateful and blessed and thankful that they did let me go, that I'm able to be here to tell the story, and that hopefully that it will touch someone, whether young, old, but more so young people, youths.
There's a lot of ways to go when you're in prison. I mean, you can double down and get and go hard. you can do a lot of different things. But in your case, and this is what I find interesting about this conversation, is that you did find the arts. You mentioned your theater company. You talk about, you know, using creativity and being able to tell your story, but possibly to help others, as a way to get past where you're at in life. Why did you do that? I mean, because a lot of people will find religion. Some people will like I said, get hardened. But in your case, you chose the arts.
Right. Some people, they get worse than they came in. And some people, they get better. Like you said, some people choose religion. Some people choose gangs. It's all about survival. That's why they choose whatever they choose. And I chose art. Art was my survival. That's what kept
me
going.
How does that work? I mean, to choose art over gangs or anything else. I mean, how did that happen? How does that help you survive?
Well, I was never one. The gang thing didn't really grasp. It didn't really appeal to me. And the religion aspect, I had that at home so much that it pushed me away. So when I was introduced to the arts, it just, I don't know, it's hard to explain. It just took a hold of me, and I just knew that this was something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
20-plus years later, you're released. You obviously were back to the story at the beginning where you meet GQ. You get the chance to go see him perform. And here we are in Chicago a couple of years later where you're performing a piece about your story, about your life at the Goodman Theater, just a couple blocks here, one of the best theater companies in the world. What does it mean to you to have your life encapsulated in 20 plus years on stage on Saturday?
It means a lot. I still can't believe it. It's I'm still trying to grasp a hold of it. You know, G's telling me and Anthony's telling me everything that's happening is going on, and it's big, and I'm like, wow, am I ready for this? You know, this is my first time really doing something like this. I mean, I've performed many times, but at the same time, I know I'm ready. I'm ready to tell the story.
Tyrone Taylor is my guest in studio tonight, along with GQ and Anthony Mosley, all part of the Peace Book Festival, which is going to be on stage at the Goodman Theater, coming up here on Saturday at 3, 5:30, and 8 o'clock, free show, a festival, second annual, that brings together hundreds of artists to perform 24 world premieres, all for free, and there'll be a subsequent tour this fall to some different neighborhoods in Chicago. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. And we'll come back and we'll hear the performance. We haven't had a lot of time to. I know you guys have a long day of rehearsing tomorrow, but we'll get something live here on 720 yeah. WGN.
It'll be our first rehearsal.
There you go. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Anthony Mosley, GQ from the Q Brothers, and Tyrone Taylor, who are in studio, and they are going to perform a little bit of their piece that they're doing at Peace Book Festival at the Goodman Theater this Saturday. There are going to be over 250 performers doing 24 world premiere pieces. Anthony, these are by design, and I've known your work for so long. And I've known you, but the one thing I've always loved about collaboration is you don't mess around with getting to the point. And these are pieces that are all under 7 minutes, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever it is. But I can't tell you, and I've said this to you before, but I've been to sketchbooks where I'm like, this man, you got it. The last thing we need to see is 35 minutes a piece, you know, be there for 17 hours. But there's something about, you know, organizing this in a way that the artists have to be somewhat succinct with their work.
There's nothing more valuable than time. It's our most precious commodity. It's really our only commodity. And and there's something about asking theater artists to treat it as if it is as precious as it is. And you have to get at it. And then there's a community when you can collect a bunch of things and experience them in one sitting.
Yeah.
You get this portfolio, this collection that will have layers and strike you in deep ways. And one of the layers we'd like to bring in there is this docudrama meta-theatrical. It's not a play. This is real life.
Well, that's what we just heard from Tyrone. I mean, this is not a play. I mean, yeah. in the way, though, GQ, I mean, because we're going to hear a little bit of it. I mean, you bring theatrical elements to it. I mean, you're playing a character. You're both playing characters, really. But it's not a play. I mean, this is really more of a story.
You know, it's a real story. And it's like when Tyrone and I met and we walked around the city in Manhattan, we were talking. He told me about this piece he did on the inside that was a forgiveness story where he was visiting the gravesite of Atbal, the victim, and asking for his forgiveness. And I was really, really taken by that. I mean, I have forgive tattooed on my arm, so it's a huge part of my spirituality. So when he said, I have this forgiveness story, I'm like, tell me about it.
Yeah.
So I go, what do you think about if we would it ever be in your interest to have the story told from your point of view and to jump back and forth between like maybe the victim and his family that morning and you and your mom that morning and then like events through the day building up to something.
Right.
And he was like, never really pictured it like that. And then I was like, you know, send me the thing sometime. So when the Peace Book thing came up, that's as far as we had gotten. Like I was like, I want to do something. And then, you know, I really wanted to tell a story about forgiveness. So there is, we had to fictionalize everything about the Pakistani character because this happened in 93. I've gone online and scoured, like you can't find one piece of information. His name is in a list Suvinder Atwal's name is in a list of cab, murdered cab drivers, and it just says the date and their name, and it's just a commemorative thing. But there's no articles about it. There's nothing. And so he even asked his PO, do you mind me telling this?
No, go ahead.
He asked his PO, can I get the location of the gravesite I would like to visit? And they were blown away. She was like, well, I've never heard that.
Let me ask you, Tyrone. I mean, when you're putting together a piece of your story and it includes the victim to a violent act, a murderer that puts you in jail for 20 plus years, when you go through that action and want to retell that story, how much of it is at front of brain? How much does that experience that happened to you that changed the course of your life, that choice that was made, how much of it is on your brain constantly?
It's on my brain every day, every hour, every minute, every second. I live with it every day. You know, I still feel hurt, pain, hurt. I still cry tears from it. You know, This is not first, let me be clear. This is not anything for me to boost my career. This is not anything for me to get paid or rich off. I owe a debt to society. My debt to society wasn't me serving 20 years. That was my punishment. My debt to society, anyone's debt to society, is after. Once you get out of prison, now what? What are you going to do? And I did the most worst thing to me ever possible that you could do to another human being. I mean, I put that at the bottom of the totem pole. I mean, there's a lot of other heinous crimes out there, but to me, the most heinous is taking someone's life because they can't come back. And I am so sorry for that. I regret that. I am remorseful for that. You know, I was even thinking about hopefully me just staying, keeping it together, you know, while we're on the radio, you know, keep professional, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be real if you didn't, you can hear it in my voice right now. It wouldn't be real if I didn't shed a tear.
Well, I think there's this notion and it's one of a stereotype that, that the violence and when violence is perpetrated, especially here in Chicago, and we see numbers that come out that these are desensitized kids, that nobody really cares. They're pulling triggers and they don't care who's affected by it, and they move on to the next day, and it's a cycle of violence. And to hear you tell your story that it stays with you, that it's a part of you, that you want to pay back a debt to society and you live with it every day, I think is honest, and it's something that I think we don't hear every day.
Because no matter how much anybody forgives me, I have to live with forgiving myself, which I don't think I've done, and I don't think I'll ever do it. And the only way for me to give back in any way is I took his life. I can't bring him back physically, but hopefully I can do something that will bring him back in a way that he's remembered. Because if I don't, who will?
Tyrone Taylor in studio, along with GQ and Anthony Mosley. Peace Book Festival is at the Goodman Theater on Saturday, 3 o'clock, 5:30, and 8 o'clock. It is a free show that's a festival, second annual, that's bringing together over 250 artists to perform 24 world premiere plays. I wouldn't even call them plays, but just pieces. All on stage, free, as part of Anthony Mosley collaboration and Peace Book Festival. All right, so I think we should, you guys, I know that rehearsal's kind of been out the window and you're going to do a lot of this tomorrow, but you guys are open to the idea of performing a little bit of it, maybe not the whole thing, but
yeah, we'll do the maybe the first minute or so.
Yeah.
We'll cut it off before it gets too far, just to give you an idea of the setup and the back and forth and the characters. We have a third character who's like the one asking the questions, so I'll do that okay. Character's voice as well, but that's going to be played by Jillian Burfett, who's not here right now.
Okay. So let's see. This is a snippet from 17 and New Life. That's the name of the piece. And
17 to New Life.
17 to New Life.
So,
sorry.
You know, 17 to Life is the sentence that he got, even right. though he was 17 when when he committed the crime, but the sentence by the time he was 18 was 17 to life. New life.
Yeah.
17 to life. So we call it 17 a new life because that's a big theme for us.
And remember how you introduced me. Mm-hmm. You said that I did 20 years, but my sentence was 17 to life. So I did more time than I was actually sentenced to.
Yeah. And so, on the inside, when he was a model, like a positive, like rehabilitated model prisoner, and they kept him in for extra years.
There was no program, no positive program that I didn't take. I took everything that I could take. Anger management programs, violent programs, college, whatever they had that I knew that would better me.
With a life sentence, with a 17 to life sentence, does it change? I mean, to take a lot of those programs and to be a model prisoner, to get out for good behavior, that's not part of it in the way that it's a life sentence. I mean, you're in. So a lot of what you're talking about is just bettering yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that I could not come out the same way that I went in. I had to come out a better person.
Tyrone Taylor, GQ, in studio. Why don't we hear a snippet from 17 to New Life?
What was the year?
1993.
Your name?
The streets name me Fly Ta.
I see. What time of year was it? The beginning of winter. State your name? Atval. First name, Suvinder. My friends called me Sue or sometimes Suvi. My mother told me Johnny Cash wrote a song about me. My Italian neighbors had kids who became friends with me. Their whole family got a real kick out of calling me Vinny. Your father?
I'd be like, I want to see him. Why ain't he here? Moms would always say, you want to see your dad? Just look in the mirror. I met him a couple times, but that was it. He was finished. Anyone who knew him said I was his spitting image.
Location? Queens. Moved there with my dad and mom. I was 10 years old when we left Pakistan. I always wanted to do something different than my dad. I mean, it's just so cliche. I'm from Pakistan. I drive a cab. Schooling?
Private Catholic. Mom's a real devout until they had enough of me and finally kicked me out.
I swore it wasn't going to be for the rest of my life, but it was there, and I needed to support my pregnant wife. You were married? Yes, it had been arranged. I know, Americans think that's completely insane. I would tend to agree, but I was best friends with Sana's brother, and growing up it was crystal clear. We had always loved each other. Married?
Hell no.
Single?
Hell no. Had this girl who always loved to give me hell, though. Why you always hang with thugs? Why you such a deadbeat? Peace, grabbed my heat, took my damn feet to the streets. I wasn't a big dude, so when Robert became a profession, I copped me a piece in case I needed protection.
To lower our costs, we'd often lease a cab together, so I shared one with Farouk. I had known him forever. We had this spot where it was easy to park the car and central for both of us on Ditmars Boulevard.
See, I was addicted, not to drugs, but I was sick. Instead of standing on corners, I'd go out looking for a Vic.
Vic? Who is that? Your file here doesn't list him.
Vic is everybody. Anyone can be a victim. I was Aggie. I ain't find one after coming this far. Another lap before heading back. I took a left on Didmars.
We'll stop there. Thank
you. There you go. Good stuff.
Thanks, guys.
That's a snippet from 17 to New Life, which will be performed at the Peace Book Festival coming up here on Saturday at the Goodman Theater. The second annual Peace Book Festival, GQ and Tyrone Taylor, Tyrone's story on stage at the Goodman. And it's also part of the fall tour that's coming. Anthony, these kind of pieces, this kind of story, the ability to tell this kind of stuff and to be real. Was this are you seeing it come to fruition? I mean, this is second year of doing the festival and you have a lot of artists that want to express themselves, but rarely do you get an opportunity to have an artist who has had this personal experience.
This is the evolution of the work Clive Rexman has been doing for 22 years, and we talked about spirituality, and Clive Rexman kind of made a turn 5-6 years ago, and it's incredible to be here to watch all of these lives and stories come together at the Goodman Theater this Saturday. It's nearly overwhelming. Our good friend David Dismalchian is coming in.
That's great, yeah.
He co-authored a piece with a 17-year-old Aisha June who lives on the South Side. I matched them up, and they are going to meet for the first time Friday and perform on Saturday. We have these. Each piece is its own kind of prayer for Chicagoans to start to figure this out. And people say that the country goes as Chicago goes, and it's really time for us to get our hearts and our minds around healing. And you know, 2018 will be the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, and you know, I have a dream that white people will become a part of the solution. And telling these stories, being here with you in studio, you know, we need to demystify these really difficult conversations about white privilege and about the racism that that is just part of who we are as Chicagoans.
GQ, let me bring you in, you know, your parting thought on this as well, because you've done a lot of work with the Q Brothers, a lot of great performance-based stuff, a lot of Shakespeare. What's it mean to be a part of this story, a story that is real, that is painful, it's emotional, but once again, real?
It's humbling, you know. I feel like from the time that Tyrone, every time we discuss it, what we've come back to is we keep saying it's bigger than us. It's bigger than us. And so I just feel like the more in tune I've gotten with my purpose and my truth, like the more obvious like my path has become. And so I'm just grateful to accept my my role in it.
Tyrone, you said that you'll never be able to forgive yourself. But are you healing?
I'm trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying. Me doing things like this is part of the process. It's not going to happen overnight, you know? So this is just part of the process.
Tyrone Taylor, GQ, Anthony Mosley in studio tonight. The Peace Book Festival, the second annual Peace Book Festival, will be at the Goodman Theater on Saturday, 3 o'clock, 5:30, 8 o'clock.
Our piece will be at 8 p.m.
And your piece will be at 8 o'clock. GQ and Tyrone doing 17 to New Life. I can't thank you guys for coming. I can't thank you enough for performing. I can't thank you enough for sharing your story. And congratulations on another festival. And we look forward to the tour in the fall.
Yo, thanks for having us, Justin. Great to see you again, bro.
That was a good hour. Wow. What a story, huh? You can go see that at the Goodman Theater, see the entire piece. We could have done the whole... The second half of that piece turns into a little bit... It's the more intense part of the story, of course, but it also has a lot of swears, which are great for the stage, but not so great for AM radio. But, yeah. You know, when you talk about forgiveness and especially violent crime and changing the course of your life and, of course, others... It's a tough thing to talk about. And rarely do we get a chance to hear from people like that. Especially when you're talking about someone who was given a life sentence. And what I did enjoy about Tyrone's story, because you know, I mean, it's a heart wrencher, but at the same time it does include murder. It's not something that is taken lightly. But what I liked about his story is that he never made an excuse for it, and he never tried to compartmentalize it. He lives with it every day. He doesn't forgive himself. And I'd ask the question, I think that's part of me, the curiosity I had for the story, but you know, just the concept of what our stereotype is of people who commit violent acts, especially here in Chicago. We've created a weird stereotype where the 16-year-old who pulls a trigger doesn't care, or the next day he's out again. And I think that may be true in some cases, and it also may not be. And we're talking about living in a society where, or a neighborhood, or a community in which survival is about violence. There's probably a good percentage of people who feel like Tyrone feels when a choice is made or a mistake is made that changes the course of their life. So I don't know. It's just an interesting perspective that you don't get to hear every day. So I look forward to hearing more from Tyrone from, and always great to see Anthony and GQ. Both those guys have been on the show before. Anthony came through for Peace Fest and for Collaboration. I've known him for years, he's very good. Like, they used to do Sketchbook, which was a show they do at the Chopin and Division. And I go see that and I'd be like, man, this is the best stuff anywhere. They're doing 3 or 4 minute little snippet plays, or, you know, as he calls it, pieces, and just strip the pretension away from plays. And they were able to do some really, really outstanding creative work. And even the idea of pairing people up and trying new things and having world-class artists like GQ and the Q Brothers working with, you know, Tyrone Taylor, who, you know, had a life sentence to create a piece of art. That's pretty impressive. So that's coming up to Saturday at the Goodman Theater. All right, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we will talk with a hip-hop producer here in town from the Northwest suburbs who is making a name for himself on records like Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book, and of course Chief Keef, really at the epicenter of Chicago hip hop. CB Mix, Chris Barnett in studio. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock tonight, Greg Flam will be here. We'll do the swap meet, 312-981-7200. Hey, this is where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. We'll tell you if it's worth anything. At DuPage Picker at Facebook and Twitter, 312-981-7200. Of course, not only must listen to, it must participate radio. I love participating in it. My favorite is people call in and they are climbing in their attic as they speak. I've got this old Star Wars toy. And they explain it to us. It's great. Love it. That's coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. Well, my next guest has had a tremendous year producing and mixing music. Chris Barnett, better known as CB Mix, has become one of the hottest hip-hop producers in town. He's not only produced the track Mixtape on Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book, but he's also been producing Chief Keef. The producer and DJ grew up in the Northwest suburbs in Streamwood. He started his career jumping from studio to studio, working as an hourly sound engineer. But today, his credits include all the big names in hip-hop, including Chance, Vic Mensa, Chief Keef, Lil Bibby, Lil Yachty, and, of course, his work with the Chop Squad here in town. CB Mix, welcome to the download. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to meet you. You know, I feel like we rarely get to get a chance to talk to the artists behind the board as opposed to the ones in front. Talk about how you got involved in this, because hip-hop wasn't, I mean, you're from the Northwest suburbs. Talk about how you first got involved in music.
Well, I've always been into music, playing instruments, trying to start a band since, as soon as I picked up a guitar, couldn't find a good band, so I just started recording vocals and kind of got into that.
So you were looking to start a band. What kind of music?
Oh, like grunge rock, alternative rock, something like that.
Yeah. What years are we talking, like the 90s for you, like 2000s?
99, 2000, 2001. Yeah.
So, I mean, what brought you down to Chicago? I mean, to be in the Northwest suburbs, you couldn't find a band, so you said, let's go down here and start working in sound?
Yeah, I started off in jumping from studio to studio, and as you know, building the network, hourly recording and all that. It was just a no-brainer. At some point, I had to move to Chicago, so I had an opportunity to moved to Wrigleyville, and I opened up a studio at the Music Garage Chicago, and it all took off from there.
Well, talk about when you talk about going hourly to hour, like what that means. I mean, because a lot of people may not know that. They may know that, you know, there's different engineers, and of course, but a lot of the work is done in Chicago, especially for sound engineers, is done late night hours or
yeah, it's always been late night hours.
Yeah, like how does it work? I mean, it's not a 9-to-5 kind of profession.
No, you got to kind of, especially starting off, you got to take what you can get. So, hourly recording engineer, I got to do what you tell me to do. But now at this point, I kind of could spread out and do what I want to do and work with who I want to work with. So that's what's different with my situation.
How did you get into hip hop? What was it about hip hop that drew you to it? And talk about your first run-ins with the hip hop crew that you're producing these days.
Good question. I don't know. I just, in high school, I knew a lot of hip-hop artists. I was linking up with a lot of producers and rappers, and I was just really fascinated with making music.
Yeah.
Making beats, recording vocals.
When you were the work in Wrigleyville, when you set up your shop, talk about who was coming through when you finally got to a spot where you were putting, you know, you had your own place, your own studio.
Well, that's where I lived. I had, first I moved my studio out here to the West Loop on like the Near West Loop or something, Music Garage Chicago, and I was there for a few months, and I couldn't take the commute anymore, so I had to move out to Chicago. I got a spot in Wrigleyville. But I just had a monthly rental at the Music Garage, set up some studio gear, and started making connections and getting to work. It was right around the time I quit my regular 9-to-5 and got to making music full-time.
Was that hard to make a transition from getting rid of the 9-to-5 to making music? I mean, what goes into going after a career in music producing?
Oh, I'd say it was definitely very hard because it seems like a job that everybody wants. So in order to stay ahead, you got to work every single day, every minute of every day. I got to always be accessible. If you call, message, any hour of the day, I gotta respond and get the money in the door. So it was definitely very hard, especially being in Chicago. There's a lot of competition.
Is there a lot? I mean, I don't know much about the studio scene, and I think about the legend. How much did you know coming in? Because I think of some of the bands. I think of the grunge bands of the 90s or the alt-rock bands, whether it be Smashing Pumpkins or Veruca Salt. Is a famed story where Penny's Noodles is in Wicker Park, that used to be a studio above there. How much do you as a sound producer or sound engineer in town pay attention to the history of the studios that have been here?
I hear a lot about it, but unfortunately there's not very much left here in the city.
Really?
There's definitely a lot more going on in LA when it comes to like historical studios that I hear about. I mean, I want to know everything I can, but unfortunately here in Chicago, I don't hear too much about that kind of stuff.
CB Mix in studio, Chris Barnett, who is a sound producer and sound engineer who mixes and produces. He actually produced a track mixtape on Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book. He's also producing Chief Keef. Chicago has obviously become the epicenter of the hip-hop world, and some of the names I've just been throwing around, whether it be Chance or Vic Mensa or Chief Keef, they have become bigger than just Chicago. Talk about how you met. Why don't we start with how did you meet Chance the Rapper? Like, what, as a sound engineer, how does that happen? And then take us through how do you get to a point where you actually get to produce on his record?
Well, when I moved out to when I moved the studio to the Music Garage, January 2011, Chance, Vic, and my homie Greg and the rest of the band, Kids These Days, they had a rehearsal spot right down the hall. So that's how I built my relationship. We were just both in the same building all day, every day, working on our own stuff. And it, from time to time, it would overlap. So I was lucky to be able to build that relationship pretty early on.
There's rehearsal room, and they're just in there working on music, and you're working on your own music, but the fact that you guys see each other in the hallway?
Yeah, we were kind of like coworkers, I guess you could say.
Yeah, right? I mean, but how does it work when you're a sound engineer? I mean, are there times where like, hey, we could use your services? Hey,
Yeah, we were always linking up at random times and just doing little stuff here or there.
Yeah. I mean, is that similar to how it works with most musicians? I mean, is it the idea that it's that kind of casual relationship, or is each musician different?
I'd say everyone's different, but as long as you're open to any opportunity to work and network with people that you cross paths with, you never know what it could lead to, and I sure didn't back in 2011.
I mean, even, I think 2011, and I as predates, I mean, that's, you think about it, that I guess that predates even Chance's acid rap and possibly surf and everything after that. I mean, what did you think of the crew? You know, the crew that you're hanging out with. I mean, did you think they had talent? I mean, was this
I definitely thought they had talent. Yeah. I mean, it was a room full of musicians and creative people, vocalists. It was just amazing to be around so many people that had similar interests to me. So it really helped me excel.
As a sound engineer, can you tell? Can you, I mean, you point out right away a musician who's got more talent than the other? I mean, can you figure it out just from being in the room based on the talent that they've got in front of you?
Yes and no. I mean, sometimes you never know what's going to take off, and other stuff that you could pour your heart and soul into and think it's the best in the world and won't ever do anything.
Right.
So it's really hard to say.
All right. Well, we talked about Chance, the other artist that you work closely with, Chief Keef. Talk about that relationship. How did you meet Keef and how did you get to a point where you were helping him not only set up his house, but produce on his stuff?
I met Keef through Young Chop, my good friend Young Chop, who was Keef's original producer for all his biggest records. Just being a producer and engineer in Chicago, it was only a matter of time before I linked up with Chop. He always needed work done. And we built a really powerful relationship. We did a lot of work together, starting in about 2012, right when Keef blew up. So it took a little while for me to build that relationship with Keef. 2013, we did a record called Decline that did pretty well with Chief Keef and Lil Durk. And one day he just called me when he moved into a new house, freaking out because his Pro Tools system didn't work. It was the first time I spoke to him personally ever. He just called me like, yo, I need you to come out here and fix my Pro Tools setup. I was like, all right, just let me know. And he called me back. He's like, all right, your flight's booked. It leaves at 7 a.m. the next morning. So I was out of there, and I just showed up at his house.
And set it up. Yeah. And I read an article about that, too, because that changed a lot of the way that Keith produced his music, because now he had a setup in his house. He didn't have to go to studios. I mean, you came in and set it up, and it changed the way that he actually approached his own music.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely helped out a lot when you could be at home and comfortable and just work whenever the inspiration strikes.
You know, for you, when I think about, you know, like you just mentioned, I mean, being around Young Chop and other producers, I mean, do you get to a certain point where you does it blow your mind when something like that has happened? Like when the record comes out and Chief Keef is blowing up and it's bigger than anyone anticipated or expected. I mean, as a sound engineer and a producer on that stuff, I mean, is it just a roller coaster ride?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I guess it's a lot of ups and downs, but you know, I make a lot of music. I'm working on a lot of stuff, and it's the greatest feeling in the world when something touches the whole world like that, when it gets that big. Yeah. So it's almost indescribable.
You know, for you, and I think about the world, and I have so many questions about the art and the skill that goes into being a producer and a sound engineer. You know, for you, talk about the evolution of starting out, wanting to get into this, like you said, like when recording vocals because you couldn't find a band that you wanted to work with, to where you are today. I mean, is it a constant evolution of learning and sort of learning new tricks of the trade?
Yeah, I'd say for the past 10 years, it's evolving very, very fast. You got to stay on top of all the new software and hardware that's coming out, because if you even fall behind for a day, that means the rest of the competition is a day ahead of you. So I've always made it a priority to learn anything and everything new that comes out. Any software, VSTs, hardware, you got to stay on top of everything.
Chris, you're in a situation where you kind of straddle both worlds, because when you started in the business, it was still a little bit more of the, I don't want to say analog, we already moved to a digital world, but you were a little bit more of the traditional way that you'd record music. And then the other foot was in the way that software, and you mentioned hardware and software, has advanced in the way that people can just set up in their bedrooms. They don't necessarily, there's so much, it's become so much easier to record and produce music. I mean, talk about that. Is it help you that you've been there for both worlds?
Yeah, definitely. I guess you could say it's a blessing and a curse. It's very attainable to make good sounding music out of your bedroom with only a few $100 nowadays, to where 15, 20 years ago, you needed a few $1,000 to get a few hours of studio time, if anything, to get something
right,
done.
Right. I mean, and does that, but does it help you from your art standpoint that you understand the way it was done before?
Oh yeah, definitely. I try to approach everything with, a fundamental understanding of how they used to do it. Because even nowadays with all the digital stuff, it's all derivative from all the analog stuff. So by talking to the older, more experienced guys that I know close to me, I'm able to stay grounded and know why stuff is done, how it's right, done, I guess right. You could say.
You, when I'm throwing out all these terms that I hope I'm using in the right way, but I mean, sound engineer, producer, and mixer are all three different jobs. I would assume at a certain point there's the operator, there's the producer who's actually trying to get what they need to get out of the sound and the artist, and then there's also the final product of actually putting it all together. Is there one area that you like better than another?
I'd say producing. Producing and composing is probably my favorite.
How does that work? I mean, it's funny because I just watched the Defiant Ones was talking about that on the show not too long ago, about Jimmy Iovine and the idea of what it means to be a producer, this concept of like your sound, your style, you know, what you want to, you have to push the artist, but at the same time, you have to back off. Like you have to work together to get the right energy. I mean, what is it? What makes a CB mix production?
I attack it from all angles. Just putting creative input on everything I possibly can. Compose the music, arrange it, record the vocals. You got to create an environment where the vocalist could be really comfortable and open and try new ideas quickly. And then know when to give criticism. Don't overdo it. Don't underdo it. That's kind of like the role of a producer, I guess you could say.
Yeah, right. And I would think that, I mean, you're talking about big egos. I mean, these are guys that, the artists are successful and they know what they want to do and they might want to go in one way and you're trying to get something else. So how do you deal with that when you're in a creative, collaborative environment with someone who's got a lot of ego?
You just got to know exactly what to say and exactly when to say it. And you got to keep it short and sweet and the timing has to be perfect. But I can make you do exactly what I want you to do without you even knowing it just by saying the right thing at the right time.
Your kid from Streamwood, white kid from Streamwood, dealing with African Americans like Chief Keef and Chance the Rapper. I mean, and Lil Yachty, and I think a Lil Bibby. I mean, are there ever times when artists come in and go, "This is my guy, this is my producer, who's this guy?" But I mean, you have the chops, and it's amazing to think about the sound that you produce and that you put together, even in tracks like Mixtape that defy that stereotype.
I guess early on, I kind of got that a little bit, but the work kind of speaks for itself. And being a hourly recording engineer at first, I really just learned how to run a business, I guess you could say. Like, talk to people, get to the point, get the money in and out the door, and keep everybody happy. And then by repeating that over and over again, eventually people started to realize that I do good, fast work. And it was no question after that.
Do you have to push yourself? I mean, as art, especially being in the epicenter of Chicago with hip-hop and it becoming the most... I mean, think about it in the hip hop world. Chicago's at the epicenter of it. Do you have to push yourself to change that sound, to push that sound, to try new things? Because what we heard in Coloring Book, even Mixtape, the track you did, is different than the stuff that we heard on some of the Chief Keef stuff. But I mean, how do you evolve as an artist?
You just got to stay working and try everything. You definitely can't get comfortable. You got to push the boundaries and come up with new ideas and try new weird things. I might spend all day trying to do something new and weird and nothing will work or stick, but it'll get me one day ahead to know that what doesn't work. But yeah, the sound evolves very, very quickly. So you got to stay on top of that. And if you get all the way to the top, the forefront, then you could be the producer that's setting the new wave, the new sound that's going to come out. So I think I'm inching right up there, and especially with the people I'm working with, hopefully I could take it there.
It's really great. I mean, I think about all the producers that are in Chicago that are working and getting an opportunity to do things. Do you think that, and I always ask this of the artists that come through, and they say, you know, talk about what it means to be from Chicago when it becomes to be a Chicago rapper or Chicago MC, whatever, what have you. What does it mean to be a Chicago producer? I mean, or an engineer? The idea of being here in Chicago, not having to go to LA, and being able to produce these tracks that are played hundreds of thousands of times, if not millions. And what does it mean to you to be a Chicago producer?
Well, Chicago is my home. I did a lot of traveling and I worked all over the country, but I always longed to come back to Chicago. There's definitely a lot more work and a lot more people out in LA, for example. But Chicago is a lot smaller than people think, especially when it comes to people doing music. And before you know it, you're going to rub shoulders with everybody. So this is where all my friends and family is. So I guess that's what it means to me.
Do you know, for you, I mean, do you see a future where it's not just hip hop? Where, I mean, you've had such success with the hip hop artists, but do you see a way of going back to the grunge roots that you were looking for in the late 90s?
I have definitely. I'm most successful in the hip hop realm, but I do a lot of bands. I do house music, R&B, pop music. I got an artist, Nick Bean, that I'm doing pop music with, artist Sheree Hicks. I do a lot of house music with. I got 3 days booked in the studio with a jazz band next week. So I do a lot of interesting stuff, but you might not hear about it if you don't pay attention too closely.
There you go. Chris Barnett, and also known as CB Mix, the pride of Streamwood. One of the hottest producers in hip-hop, working with artists like Chance, Vic Mensa, Chief Keef, Lil Bibby, Lil Yachty, Chop Squad. I mean, just to name a few. Chris, CB Mix, thanks so much for coming in, talking about your life behind the board in Chicago music.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right, coming up, Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker. Swap Meets, 312-981-7200. Darn it, I forgot my daily posters again. It's 2 weeks in a row. I had those Mayor Daily posters I wanted to show Greg. I found in a bin. Hardcore stuff. And I even moved. I got home last Wednesday, and I was like, I'll move them so I'll remember. And then I just moved them to forget. Classic.
Mayor Squeaky.
Exactly. It's Download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman coming up at 10 o'clock. Greg Flamm and the swap meet. I said, I'm so angry at myself. I moved those posters. I had great daily posters. I mean, these, and they're in good condition. Fair. Fair condition. But I feel like I remember putting them up on, like, in the garage by the thing. I'm like, oh, I'll never forget those. Then I just forgot.
You have to put them by the door that you leave out of every day.
I did. I put them by the door, and I just forgot.
They're still sitting there?
I feel like Greg has done a tremendous job of show and tell. He brings stuff every week, and I feel like every time we're together, I'm like, you know what? I have some stuff in the garage I'm going to look for. I finally did it. It took like a year plus for me to do it. And I found some good stuff. I'm excited about tonight. I have a good feeling that people will step up in my absence, my absent-mindedness. So, you know who I blame it on? I blame it on my Wii U Madden 13.
It's distracting you?
Yeah, it's just I should be spending more time getting those posters ready for the show. And instead, I've figured out I'm playing franchise on the Madden game. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's the best thing. I feel like it's better than anything else in my life right now. and today, I mean, some close games, some real close games, some questionable throws by Jay Cutler because it's 2013 in the Nintendo franchise. With the Wii and the Wii U, They stopped making the Madden football game in 2013 for some reason. Like, they just decided it's only going to be a Xbox, PlayStation kind of game. So it's not on the Nintendo system. So if you go to Amazon and put in Madden for Nintendo, the latest one you can get is 2013. So it's 4 years. So when you play on that game and you want to be the Bears, it's the Lovie Smith Bears. It's a little Earl Bennett.
Oh, yeah.
This is the lineup they've got.
Remember when they drafted him? It was like, oh, this is going to be great. Jake Cutler's college. But
here's who they got in the lineup. You'll love it. Ready? So you go Brandon Marshall and Earl Bennett. And I think the third receiver is a rookie, Alshon Jeffrey. Okay, so this is the year. The offensive line is I don't even know what's happening in the offensive line, but it's a Jamarcus Webb. The center, I don't think it's Olin Krutz. There's a different center, whoever the next center, Roberto Garza.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The center. Mm-hmm. Jay Cutler, and then Matt Forte is the running back. And then on the defensive side of the ball, it's prime time.
All we got, all the guys that we loved.
Julius Peppers, Henry Melton, Steven Paella.
Some of the guys we loved.
Israel Adonijay is in there. He's starting. Oh, yeah. Corey Wooten's the backup.
Oh, yeah, from Northwestern.
Yeah,
right?
Then you got some linebackers. You got a Lance Briggs, a Brian Urlacher, a Nick Roach. Now, I will say, and this is very strange, and I'm sure if we could ever get Nick Roach on the phone. You remember Nick Roach?
Yeah, also went to Northwestern, right? Too, yeah.
And he was the a weak side linebacker for the Bears for a couple years there. And Lovie Smith had done a great job of almost making that third linebacker who wasn't a star because they couldn't afford him because they had Briggs and Urlacher serviceable. So Nick Roach was serviceable. But in this game, and I don't know what it is, Nick Roach is white. Nick Roach is a black guy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, a fan, I thought he was great. But in the game, and they're usually pretty
accurate.
They're accurate in the skin colors and the shapes and the sizes on Madden, if anyone had plays the game. But for some reason, number 53, Nick Roach, is white.
Urlacher was bald back then.
Exactly. But I wonder how he feels about that. Because they would have played the game, right? They
would imagine have, so,
at
yeah.
some point or another, that's been brought to their attention. So, like, if you're Nick Roach and you are born black and lived black, to then have Madden make a mistake and make you white, it's a strange, I don't know.
That's odd. Right? It's a peculiar mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure harmless. It doesn't mean anything.
We should tweet him right now.
Tweet him right now. Nick Roach, did you know you're white on Nintendo Wii Madden 13? Yeah, we'll do it in the break.
Yeah, see what he says.
See what he says. So we reached out to Nick Roach for comments. And then the safeties are Major Wright.
Yeah.
And the other safety, I forgot who it is. It's someone. I forgot the other safety. But then it's Tim Jennings and Charles Tillman with a Calvin Hayden.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it.
Those are some good players.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's awesome. I just blitz Urlacher every time. Like that's the game plan. The game plan is get as close to the line as possible, and when the ball is high, I just blitz Urlacher. That's what they did. I mean, that's fair football at the time.
Why not pick who, you know, the whatever, whoever won the Super Bowl
and play that team?
Yeah, or
I'm a homer. I'm always like, I want to be the Bears. You know, you want to be the Bears. You feel like it's a hometown thing. Yeah, I'll do that. My AFC team is the Steelers. Those are the two teams. And if I get into like, I'll pick a different team, it would be like a Tampa.
It's not as fun with a team that's
just
that you're not as familiar with as the Bears.
Yeah, I just like the Bears.
Yeah.
You know. How about that news today? Then Mitch Trubisky is taking snaps with the first team. I watched NFL today. I watched the NFL live on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent half of the show with, I forgot the people, but there were coaches and general managers on the panel talking about DeShone Kizer, the rookie out of Notre Dame who is going to start for the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
They made the announcement. And they talked about what a bad idea it was, but a good idea. It was a bad idea in the sense that he's not going to be good, and rookie quarterbacks throw interceptions. That's what they do. And they have turnovers, and it's going to – but at the same time, he gives you the best chance to win, blah, 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 blah. So, but I just thought it was interesting that they were having this conversation about – and they kind of flashed up all these names. And they talked about Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, two guys from, 2 years ago now, that 3 years ago, were the number one and number two pick. And there were never any question to the Tennessee Titans that Marcus Mariota was going to play, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if he was an automatic starter or if they still had Hasselbeck there or whatever. But the point being that they drafted him to play. And the same with Jameis Winston. He actually bounced Mike Glennon from that team. And I thought it was interesting because I was listening to Adam Hoge and Kevin and Roe, and they talked about how Mitch Trubisky possibly – and he even talked about it as well, has surprised the Bears management. Meaning they made the announcement that he wasn't going to be a starter on draft day. Remember that? They made it clear that then up at Hallis Hall, they're like, the plan is to have him be a backup, to learn the league. Mike Glennon is our quarterback. He's our starter, this, that, and the other, right? But they've been surprised in the offseason, including this training camp, at how quick he's picked up the playbook. How, because they were saying that he was some sort of court, like it's college, couldn't have played a couple games in college.
Right, yeah.
He didn't know the system. He played in a shotgun. He doesn't understand mm-hmm. how fast the NFL game is. But they've been pleasantly surprised at how fast he has adjusted. And he even said, he alluded to it in the piece that Adam played, this idea that, you know, I think said something to the effect of, I think I'm even surprising myself. And then to hear Mike Glennon go, I didn't know. You're just like, I mean, I feel bad in a way for Mike Glennon that Chicago's already, he's coming to a buzzsaw. It's probably, if I were an agent at any point in NFL football and my client was like, oh, there's an opening in Chicago, I'd be like, they don't treat quarterbacks so well. You know, he hasn't even played an NFL game, and we're already criticizing, judging, and asking for the backup.
Well, because he's looked terrible.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't feel sorry for that guy making all that money.
Yeah, it's true. If he ends up, you know, getting have to swallow his pride and be a backup, he's making $18 million a year.
Now, my question is, when did the Bears knew all along they wanted Mitch Trubisky. Yeah. They were going to get him some way.
Right.
So they had the number three pick. They moved up to number two to get him. I just don't understand why they spent the money on Mike Glennon. Why not keep Jay Cutler? Jay Cutler's probably bad for the team. But, like, you know, Mark Sanchez or Colin Kaepernick, you know, sign somebody else for less money knowing that you're going
to. I don't know the economics of it, to be honest. That's what a quarterback gets paid.
Yeah, I guess.
You know,
so.
Because Jay Cutler got $22 million, $23 million, and what Mike Glennon's contract is $18 million. And the way it's structured, they've been telling us all offseason,
so
they can cut him after this year. Like, they don't even have to pay him out. So it's 1 year for $18 million. That's what you pay. It's probably what Brian Hoyer gets paid in San Francisco now, or was backup Barkley. Matt Barkley. Yeah. Right? Matt Barkley's getting $15 million. It's ridiculous. The money's ridiculous. But another thing that was said today that I thought was really interesting, to the point of what you're talking about the Bears moving up in the draft, is I forgot that maybe it was Bill Polian, because he does the,
former Colts guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said, and he said it off the cuff, and he said it in a way that was very definitive, and I had never heard this. He had said the Browns missed on Trubisky, so Kizer was the backup plan, and they had no other option but to make this guy the starter. And I was like, what do they mean missed on Trubisky? And the point he was making is that there was truth that the Browns wanted to move up and take the 49ers position, and the Bears had to give up to get him.
Hmm.
Because the Browns wanted that guy, because but they didn't want to give up their number one pick, which was going to be the kid out of Myles Garrett out of Texas A&M. But the point being that I think that the media has spun the story that the Bears overpaid, that the Bears, they were negotiating against nobody, they were against themselves. But to hear Bill Polian just kind of dismissively go, well, they missed on Trubisky, so they had to go with DeShone Kizer, makes you go, huh. Hmm. So there was some... It felt like there was some movement
for this
kid. They
needed to do that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that now makes sense. If this kid is truly going to be an NFL football star and there are more than one team that believes so, then why wouldn't you move up and give away a third-round pick or fourth-round pick?
Now, did they talk about – did Adam mention so, yeah, he's taken some snaps with the first team. That's great. But then, you know, Rob's been playing a clip of John Fox saying – Glennon's going to play the first half,
right.
And then, you know, whatever, Trubisky will get in the second half with, presumably, I mean, I think some of the starters play in through the third quarter.
Poor first-string starters. Glennon gets a sit-down, but the first team has to come out for the third quarter. Ugh.
So if he shows more things in practice with the first team, I mean, this is the third game. In the fourth game, nothing's going to happen. Right. You're going to play the Browns.
Let me put it this way, and then we'll take a break. But if Mitchell Trubisky comes out and outplays Mike Glennon, and then next week, even after the fourth preseason game, they say, you know what, we made a call. Mitch Trubisky's our starting quarterback. Would you have a problem with that? Would you have a problem with the way they extended it and played this game with Mike Glennon's our guy and played him at the beginning? No, you would say, all right, good move. Best guy won in camp.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go, right? It's a win-win for the Bears. I mean, I think it's a lose if they say, Mike Glennon's, if they pull Lovie Smith, they're like, Mike Glennon's our quarterback, and even though he gives you no chance to win and actually hurts you while we're playing the game, like in the NFL regular season, when you could have picked somebody else, that's a loss. But no fan is going to begrudge them for playing Mike Glennon as a starter right now, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
If it was September 5th and they're like, hey, you know what? This coming up on Sunday, Mitch Trubisky is going to be our starting quarterback. It'd be the number one story on SportsCenter. That's the other part, is it's like, think about it from a marketing standpoint. Wouldn't you want to have Mitch Trubisky be the starter, because that automatically bumps you up on a national level? People want to see this kid.
Yeah.
When he played well, when he played well in the first preseason game, it was the number one story on SportsCenter. They're like, what do we have in Chicago?
Right.
They want, this kid's a national star. He's not just a local star. They weren't doing, how did Mike Glennon do?
Like, right.
This wasn't about the Bears. It was about Mitch Trubisky.
I wanted to see how Carson Wentz did. I wanted to see how Dak Prescott did. Those are the guys that, you know, you're interested in seeing.
Right.
You know, outside of your home team.
Right. So there you go. That was our Bears talk. I feel good. Right? I feel like...
Solid.
Zim and Kaufman. Kauf and Zim. Weeknights. Zim and Kauf. It's Download here, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman coming up 10 o'clock. Greg Flam's going to be here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. He's become, you know, they have all these articles about the first Twitter president. He's the first Twitter picker. So
speaking of that, did you tweet to...
Oh, I didn't tweet to Nick Roach yet.
Oh, man.
I'm going to have to do that.
He's probably doing something busy. Do it, like, during the daytime tomorrow when he's...
Yeah.
He's all over the social media.
He's teaching some young linebackers foot speed right now.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Tomorrow night on the show, Martha Bain's going to be here. She's the author of the new book, Rust Belt Chicago. We're going to be talking about the disappearance of manufacturing in the Chicago area. Tom Gagin's going to be here as well, longtime labor advocate and activist and attorney. He is also a playwright. He's got a play on stage. So Tom Gagin coming through. We haven't had Tom on. I see his name all the time, everywhere. I think his name was being thrown around with the Sun-Times as well. But great to have him on. I love him. He's great. He's always good radio. And then we'll talk about the Chicago Fringe Festival, theater festival hitting Jefferson Park. So all that coming up tomorrow on the show. And this Friday, very excited to say, it's the beginning of our Preps Plus Chicago show. Sam Penianovich back in the driver's seat, taking us around the horn when it comes to high school football. It's that time of year again? Are you kidding me?
Felt like fall this morning.
Yeah. I wonder how my alma mater, McHenry, is going to do this year. You know, when I went to McHenry, Pete, don't want to make a big deal about it, but we were perennial powerhouses.
Really?
Well, we won our division every year, and then we got beat by the Rockford teams in the first round of the playoffs.
Mm.
A couple of guys came out. Our Bill Marinangel was a fast running back, played somewhere, college.
Is that the DuPage Valley Conference?
No, it's the Fox Valley Conference.
Fox Valley.
So it would be Woodstock, McHenry, Crystal Lake South, Crystal Lake Central, Crystal Lake West, Crystal Lake 10, like Crystal Lake 19,
those,
Crystal
yeah.
Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so those are like the Cary Grove. That's a good team. They've been good lately. But McHenry hasn't been great in the last couple of years, ever since I've been here at WGN. And I'd always ask Sam what's up with McHenry. He'd be like, no, they ain't
nothing.
Done so well.
Yeah.
So, but that's okay. This might be the year.
Yeah.
I mean, if they want to get serious about it, they got to start, you know, rolling to Texas and getting those Texas kids to come to McHenry West.
Why don't you be their Matthew McConaughey? Why don't you go out like he does for the Longhorns?
Right.
Why don't you go out there, give them a pep talk?
Yeah. I could be the guy and be like, McHenry football, warrior football. This is what it's about.
Yeah.
Or I could be the recruiter for the McHenry program. I can go to Miami. You know, and talk to the kids down in Miami, South Beach. Be like, hey, you know, I know that you want to play high school here because you want to go to Miami or you want to go to Florida State. But why don't you come up there? Really great field back by McCracken. I mean, it's a really nice field. There's a concession stand, nice bleachers. Not as big as the stuff you're accustomed to down here in Texas and Florida. But come up here, you get a good education. And you get to play a little football. And there's an East Campus and a West Campus and a shuttle bus that goes between lunch there. So there's a lot of things you can do there. And it could be a pipeline to schools like University of Illinois, Illinois State, Northern Illinois, Western Illinois, Eastern Illinois, Illinois Wesleyan. Not sure if they have a football team, but a lot of options there. Illinois Institute of Art, Art Institute, Columbia College. There's a lot downtown. So I'm just saying, I mean, I could be that guy. I could be a recruiter. I could go sit in the living room with the families.
You do it.
Just for high school. This is all for, I go visit 7th and 8th graders. Something to think about. McHenry's interested. My services are available.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
That's me.
There
Let's do
he
this.
Is. Let's do it. It's the Swap Meet here on the download. 312-981-7200. Greg Flam at DuPage Picker, both on Twitter and Facebook. Greg, good to see you, buddy.
Great to be here. Thanks.
All right. 312-9 lines already lighting up. 312-981-7200. Let's have some fun tonight.
Yep.
This is a segment where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, the junk you're about to throw out. And you said, you know what? If you're Jerry's like, I've got these Longhorns I'm getting these. He always gives. I got these saddles. What do I do with these saddles?
Right.
Well, you send them here, huh? Greg, each week you bring stuff in, and you've been on a Bears poster kick.
Yeah,
you got a classic, man. This is the classic.
Yeah, this is one of the iconic. Yep, Black and Blues Brothers. This is the original. Yep. I brought in the 70 seasons, was it, or 50 seasons one?
Yeah.
They actually cropped out, I think, a couple guys on that one and kind of blew up the center guys. But this one's the original, WGN sponsored, of course, Chevrolet. And
look at that. Look at that fake dirt on those pants.
Yeah, the fake dirt, the cut gloves I love on there.
This is the one, the Black and Blues Brothers, where they're all, they got the, Van Horn's got the briefcase.
Yep.
They're all wearing the fedoras.
And the sunglasses, of course.
The sunglasses. They are the Blues Brothers offensive line. You got a Bortz. You got a Thayer. You got a Hildenberg.
Yeah, you got
a Becker.
Andy Frederick. And who's this guy down here? Tom Andrews.
Hmm.
Some
classic backups.
That's right.
Jimbo Covert over on the right.
Yep.
There you go. I mean, because we've been talking a lot about just how fun it is that there have been all these Bears posters. We're still after the elusive Miami Heat. Or was it?
Miami
it was like,
Vice, yeah.
Yeah, it was a Miami Vice, but it was like, what was it, Chicago Knights or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Where they're dressed like Crockett and Tubbs,
right.
McMahon and Peyton.
Yeah, I'm looking for that one. Also, the one I think McMahon's dressed up like an admiral or something like that in that white uniform.
And if you can find this one too, it's the Nanny McPhee, Pernell McPhee poster where he's a nanny and he's got he's got an apron on.
Okay.
And he's in the living room and he's got the he's a nanny, so he's got his he's got the vacuum and he's holding, but he's holding a kid who's dressed like a quarterback, so it looks like he's sacking the quarterback.
Yeah, that's been a long time since.
Yeah. So if you find
that one
right. That'd be...
No, I'll look for that. That's got to be like a dollar
that's
or two.
That's priceless.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
And all right, what else you got?
Brought some other stuff. Got some old Chicago ephemera stuff this week.
Oh, yes.
I know you're into that.
Yes,
I'll let you
I
look at that
stuff.
While we discuss.
All right, let's see.
While you're looking at that, I've got an unopened bottle of Marshall Field's Frango Mint Liqueur.
Look at that, the liqueur.
Never opened and obviously hard to find, and you can't sell it on eBay because it's liqueur. So it's kind of a nice paperweight.
Wow.
But yeah, and Marshall Field stuff does pretty well. I also have like their old receipt envelope they used to give you back in the day, like in the early 70s. And some music surveys, WJJD, blah blah blah, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, from
these
the 50s.
Are great. These weird brochures.
Yeah, they're kind of like
this
what to
do.
This
one says, "What shall we do?" A summer activities directory for Chicago's Near North and Lincoln Park area prepared by North Federal Savings. Summer 1964.
Mm-hmm.
So you can essentially see what you could do
back in the day.
Let's go to the, and it's just a list of a bunch of YMCAs.
Right, right.
Then you've got the Chicago City Hall tour.
Mm-hmm.
Richard J. Daley, mayor. This is awesome. It tells you all about city council, the office of the city clerk, the Chicago flag. Did you know the white background of the Chicago flag is used because white is a composite of all colors? And Chicago is a composite of all nations, Greg.
Okay, got it. I like, if you look at the phone number, they do like that Hudson 3, you know,
right,
thing.
8,000.
Right.
That's great. That's
I love when I see stuff like that. And you know it's kind of old at that point.
And then look at this. This one is an exhibit manager's Chicago guide, and it's got the Tribune Tower on the front. I don't even know what year this is.
Yeah.
It looks like it's in the 40s or something.
Right. Here. That one's pretty old,
It's dirty enough to think that it's the 40s or 50s. But look at 1955, and there it is, the Chicago's Tribune Tower staring right at Michigan Avenue in our studio. Wow,
and
how
am,
about that? That's history for you. Look at that, huh? That's right there. That's 1955. We'll take it.
Yep. I always get a kick out of just seeing how the skyline changed in the buildings over the years.
Yeah, love
so
it.
That's, cool.
That's my stuff right there. Good job.
Yeah, so that's for this
week. All right.
Week.
312-981-7200. Greg Flamm in studio. It is the swap meet. This, of course, where we evaluate your Chicago memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. That's 312-981-7200. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will start tonight's swap meet. Stay with us.
Hey.
It's a swap meet sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with Greg Flamm. Greg, of course, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Here with us every Wednesday night on WGN as we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk, the stuff you're about to throw away. Before you do it, maybe give us a ring. 312-981-7200. All right, you ready to start? Let's start with Rich tonight. Rich, what do you want to brag about, Rich?
Hey, I've got a post. Somewhere between 80s.
Uh-oh, we lose you?
Her with the sunglasses and a corncob pipe, and it says, I will return.
Oh, McMahon. A Jim McMahon poster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And
so he's got
dressed as Douglas. He's dressed as Douglas MacArthur. Oh,
that's the one I'm thinking of, yeah.
That's right.
That's awesome. It's like a door size, right? The size of like a door?
Yeah.
Or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
You have it in good condition?
Yeah, it's wrapped. It's rolled in a storage tube.
It doesn't have the thumbtack holes in the corners like a Kaufman. Kaufman joint would.
I mean, it's looks like they're asking like $80 for it. I'm trying to find any that actually sold.
Oh, don't sell it.
Yeah, but yeah, I can't find.
Just
any
brag
that
about
sold.
It. That's the best one. That I think the Miami Vice one is the best, but that MacArthur one where he's like, "I'll be back." That's the second best.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the sunglasses on and a corncob pipe, and it's just that.
I don't think he ever did come back.
You know?
Yeah, I think he did it, and then it was pretty much the end of his career. So. That was it.
Yeah.
Rich, thanks for calling, buddy.
All right, no problem. Have a good evening. Yep, bye.
312-981-7200. Let's stay with the sports team. Let's go with Steve. Steve, what do you want to brag about, Steve?
You know, I was really unsure which things to float by. You have a number of sports collectibles.
Yeah,
and I also have a ton of music collectibles. So on the sports collectibles front, I have an autographed team basketball from the first Chicago Bulls championship team. So everybody on that team signed this. I believe it's a Wilson basketball.
Okay. That's a Craig Hodges joint, right? You got Craig Hodges on that basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I have a number of autographed posters from people that are no longer with us, including Stevie Ray Vaughan, Michael Jackson, and Luther Vandross. And I was just wondering, where would be a good place to check the value of those?
They're
all in really good condition.
I mean, you could check on eBay, of course. Make sure you click the sold, not what people are asking for them, to be sure. Sometimes you might not find any because it is pretty rare. Like for a Stevie Ray Vaughan signed poster would be pretty rare. That's where you would start, and then you could go to WorthPoint as another app you can use to check prices.
WorthPoint.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a paid app. You might find a free version every once in a while. They let it out for free, but
there you go.
Okay, and what do you think the value of that basketball might be?
What are we thinking?
Yeah, they're going for about $235, it looks like.
$235.
But if you do sell it, make sure you do an auction because you could get more. All it takes is two people to get in a bidding war over it.
And I do have a certificate of authenticity.
Oh,
I know
nice.
That's pretty important.
Okay, there you go.
Yep. That helps too. Yep.
Steve, do you ever just get the urge to just one time bounce it? Just once? Let me try and bounce this thing. Let me try one 3-pointer in the driveway.
No, I have many other basketballs.
There you go.
That one's staying. It's in a Lucite case. I'm going to keep it right where it is.
And that's awesome.
Well,
good.
Steve, that's
good
why
job.
You have discipline. You know, if it were me, I'd already be taking that thing out and taking the first spin.
Right.
So, good job.
Well, don't let me mislead you. The rest of my life can be a train wreck. Just I don't. I stay on course on that. So.
All right.
Sounds good. Thanks,
Steve. Feel better now.
Thanks, guys.
That's
thank
good.
You.
At least he put it all together for us there. Yep. Jim, what do you want to brag about, Jim?
I was in a competition back when Star Wars Episode 7 came out. Pepsi ran a promotional thing, and I won the contest and got a Star Wars distressed bomber jacket from Pepsi. Still in the box, in the bag with the...
What is that? What is a distressed bomber jacket for Star Wars?
It's not like a brand new. It looks like it's...
Yeah,
you know,
they make it look old or make it look warm.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But are you a rebel soldier? Are you like Luke? Like, what are you talking about?
No, I was a hairy Yubaka.
Okay. There you go.
I won the contest.
So it's just kind of like a promotional jacket, a promotional bomber jacket, and they happen
to use their
distressed
one.
Yeah,
right. And
I see.
I won the competition for being the hairiest.
Wow. I see. So this is Star Wars 7, so this would be more like a Queen Amidala, like the guy who's supposed to be her security guy, but he's really bad at it.
Right? Yeah, I guess.
That guy.
Lost me.
Right, I don't know the names of these guys. They just go by the character arc. Yep. The guy who's supposed to be protecting the queen, but he does a bad job of it, so they have to bring they have to bring in Obi-Wan Kenobi. I got it. I figured it out.
There you go.
The jacket was the main thing, but I got a hat, got a promotion, T-shirts. I got a couple posters, but the jacket's the main. The jacket's the main thing. I've still got it wrapped, brand new, in the box. Never taken it out. It's wrapped in plastic and with the letter of authenticity.
Ooh, nice,
yeah.
A Rogue One similar jacket for Rogue One promotional jacket. It won for $400 recently. So if you're going to sell, I think you should start at that auction wise and see if it will go up.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Or don't sell it and just start wearing it every day. And then in casual conversation, when someone goes, "Oh, nice jacket," I kind of got it. It's
you
a
got
Star
the story
Wars.
Ready. I dressed up like Chewbacca.
I almost did that. I was going to put it on and go to the eclipse.
Yeah, there you go.
Become one with the universe, but we let it go.
There you
all
go.
All right, hey guys, great show, man.
Thank you, appreciate it,
buddy. All right, let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Doing a swap meet tonight. This is, of course, where we're evaluating your collectibles, your memorabilia. Your junk. I enjoy the Chicago stuff. I'm a big fan of the Chicago stuff, but I'll take some Star Wars stuff once in a while.
Right, it happens.
But I'd be the worst, because I would be the one that would be playing with that stuff. Just like the basketball, I'd take one shot.
Yep.
Just because I like to mess with things.
Yeah, you could say you shot the same ball that, you know.
Craig Hodges hit this three. Watch me hit this three. Mike, what do you want to brag about, Mike?
Yes. I also have four Ernie Banks signed cards.
Wow.
Okay.
1999, 1993, 2012.
So you sell, what cards are they? Are they from when he was playing?
Yes, to show him in the uniform with the Cubs.
Yeah, he only played for the Cubs.
Autographs. Canadian Club, Baseball Club, they've all been authenticated.
Huh. Yeah, that's cool. So if they've been authenticated, you know how much they're worth, right?
Pardon me?
I said they've already been authenticated, you know how much they're worth.
No, I mean the cards have been authenticated, but I didn't get no price on them.
Right, and they're signed as well, you said, right?
Yeah, Timeline, Chicago Professional Baseball Club. Looks like he's about 17 in this photo.
Wow. Yeah, he signed a lot of stuff first off, but obviously you have the card graded and signed, so that makes a big difference. That could be 175 and up, you know, for that. It'd probably be more is what I'm thinking, but just judging by what's sold here, it's more on the 50 to 175, but I think your card would be a little bit more than that.
There you go. That's pretty good, man, for a baseball card.
Yeah, they're in very, very good condition. There's no bends at them, nothing.
That's great. Yeah, it's good you got them graded.
That's where you beat me. Thank you, buddy. Thanks, Mike. I've got a Tony Gwynn card, but it's folded halfway, and it rained on it, and now it's peeling in the middle.
Yeah.
What's that worth?
It's worth about the same as mine that I used to put in my bicycle spoke, right?
I got a great Ernie Banks story. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I was working at a different radio station, and we wanted to do a big interview with him. It was for some anniversary, and he was in town for it. And it was funny because he was at a hotel down here in the River North area, and he said, "I'll come by, but bring a car." He's like, "Bring a car to pick me up." Well, this is working for public radio. I'm like, we're in a car. I guess a cab. We can take a cab over there. But I'm like, so one of the producers had a car, like a Honda the Honda Civic, like a hatchback. It was a two-door.
Right.
And they're like, "You can use my car." And I'm like, all right. So I drove the car over to the Westin or wherever it was. Like this is really like 2002 Honda Civic two-door.
Nice.
And picked up Ernie Banks in the lobby as he had the hat on. And he's like, "Hey." And I'm like, "Hey, before you get too excited, it's not my car. It's dirty. It's a Honda Civic. I'm sorry I don't have a town car for you, Hall of Fame, best player of all time." And he was cool with it. And then all he did on the ride, it was such a short ride. It was just from here to Navy Pier. And all he did was give me advice on life. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like to kind of say, it was weird kind of stuff. It was like unsolicited to be like, "Well, don't go to bed mad."
An apple a day keeps the doctor away.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, don't go to bed angry. I was like, all right, thanks, Mr. Banks.
Get yourself a nickname and wear a hat with that nickname on it for the last 40 years of your life.
That's awesome.
There you go. And Mr. Woo-Woo's like, thanks, Mr. Banks. Thanks for that.
Yep.
All right. 312-981-7200. 847's got to go. Every time I listen to this program, I think of all the things I've lost over the years.
Yeah.
I had a Tribune compilation of photos from the great 1967 Blizzard.
Oh,
it was produced on a really excellent high-gloss paper stock. Now gone.
I buy those Big Snow supplements that were in the Tribune, or sometimes I can't remember which one, but I buy those every time because they sell consistently for $15. And they have every photo you could want from the early Blizzard. So there's hope that, you know, you can replace that, but if there was something one of a kind or whatever, then that's a different story. But
yeah. I feel like that's the I think there should be a category. If we produce it, put some muscle into this, creative muscle, Greg.
Yeah, really.
We would do a segment where we're like, now it's time for the stuff we lost. You know, and we put some music, and then we'd have somebody on going, I once had this and I lost it.
I tell everyone, buy two of everything. Like, you buy toys, buy two. Put one away and let them play with the other one. That's
like I have a couple. I haven't even told you yet, but I forgot to bring the daily posters in.
I was listening, yes.
And I moved them. And I still forgot. But there's a couple of those. So you'd be proud in the fact that it's not just one, it's two.
Yeah.
And they're bent on the corners, and they've got tic-tac or tack marks all over them. No. They're folded in six different ways. Yeah,
but last time we couldn't find any online. So it's, you know, over time, that stuff just gets thrown away.
Priceless or $1,000. One of the two.
One of the two.
Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker here on The Download. 312-981-7200. We'll do the second half. Coming up here.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure. Like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet. With Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flamm.
Here I am.
That's right. 312-981-7200. It's the Swap Meet. Of course, where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your Chicago iconic material, your junk, before you throw it away. 312-981-7200. All right. This segment, of course, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. And we are ready for the second half. People are lined up, so let's get to it. Start with Steve. Steve, what do you want to brag about, Steve?
Well, not necessarily rag. I just wanted an evaluation. I got one copy I'm going to keep. It's already been played. But I have another copy still in the cellophane of Animal Stories Volume 1.
Wow. That
Lou Jack and Little Snot-Nosed Tommy used
right.
to host. And I've looked on eBay and some
That's
people,
awesome.
That, you know, they start the bidding at like $30. I don't think it's worth anything like that.
Yeah, the sealed one, you're probably in the $20-$25 range for the sealed one. You know, sad to say, when Mr. Lujak passed, that was the height. You know, that was about 25 for opened, you know, versions of the record. But now they've gone down to about 8 for open, and you probably get 25 for the sealed one.
Okay, well, just out of curiosity.
And there were three, if I recall right, there were like three volumes. So just, I don't know which one you have, but it doesn't really
just
matter.
Just the first one, the red cover.
Yeah, yeah, I think they're all about
That's
the same.
That's a good Chicago icon right there.
Yep.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Does that stuff play outside of Chicago? I mean, does Animal Stories, do people have an affinity for it just for the collectible part of it?
Yeah, what I found with Chicago stuff is, you know, it's because people move from here, they want, you know, something to remind them of the city. So it's, I tend to sell more of my Chicago stuff out of the state, South Dakota or, you know, Idaho. I mean, Wyoming, it's just all over the place. It's pretty rare that I actually sell something within the state from Chicago.
Really?
Yeah. So
there you go.
I don't know.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Jerry from Aurora, he says, I think I lost or I found could be a very interesting weekly segment. So the idea of, you know what I found? We do. I never have I ever. It's the
right.
same kind of, you know what I found?
You know what I lost? Yep.
You know what I lost?
Yep.
Right off the bat.
Right.
That's good. Jerry, we'll try that one
right.
That's funny. You know what I lost?
Well,
hey, how you doing? It's Justin.
It
you know what
good.
I lost?
And it has to be how they lost. Like, if they played with the sign Mickey Mantle ball, you know, and it got all scraped up from bouncing down the street.
Oh, I feel like I'd have a million things that I've lost. All right, let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you want to brag about? Mike?
Yeah, I got some California raisins, 9 total.
Okay. Are they like the 1-inch high figures or what? Because they make so many.
They're about 2 inches. The tallest may be 2.5, 3 inches.
Yeah.
Two are horns, two are microphones, one with a violin playing like a bass.
Yeah, if you're going to do a garage sale with those, they're about $1 a piece. What I'm finding are huge lots. Like one lot was 180 figures for $120. So that's less than $1 a piece.
What do you mean 180 figures? There's 180 California.
Yeah, they
raisins.
Made all different poses. One with a microphone, one behind a drum set. I started collecting that, and I finally had to give up because I was finding out that there were literally probably 100
Mike,
different.
Mike, did you collect these like back in the 80s?
No, I just pick them up at the resale shops.
I guess my question is, I mean, I know they had the weird Heard It Through the Grapevine song, but was there that much of a clamoring for
they
raisins?
Anything you could think of. They had the record. They had posters.
I know, but
figures,
so did the guy that did Kingdom Time.
right.
Like what I'm saying is I don't understand why that stuff at all is collectible. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're telling me it's going to be, I mean, I guess you're telling us that it's not. It's under $1.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, in this case, the California raisins aren't worth that much, but there are other collectibles that they made a ton of stuff that are definitely better to collect, is what I'm saying.
Was that the only song they did? Was that Heard It Through the Grapevine?
Well, I think
I don't remember.
They
I just,
did a lot of the R&B Motown stuff is what they did. It wasn't just that one song. I had the album with the poster.
Sure you did.
At the flea market and... I think I got $8 for
it. There you go. All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Yeah, thank you.
It's so true. Like, I just I just love the idea that it was somebody's idea in Hollywood. You know what I think is going to really capture the hearts of America?
Mm-hmm.
The California Raisins doing the Motown collection.
Yeah. Let's animate it. Let's take this in here.
Right? Is this the can you tell what's the Raisins version? No. Were they even singing different? Was it like session musicians?
It was like higher celebrity type session musicians or celebrities actually played on the record. I'll try to look that up.
I should ask Leland Sklar about it. See if he played on the the Raisins record. 312-981-7200. All right, we got some good stuff. Greg, a couple weeks ago I asked about the Rankin-Bass animated Christmas statues. Where would be the best place to try and sell those? Carol. I don't know. I mean, I'm not Greg, but I'll speak for Greg that says I don't know if there's a specific spot you can go to take that kind of Hallmark stuff, right? That's essentially a day that's what it is, right? It's like a Hallmark kind
of and it's and it's a throwback with the Christmas TV shows, you know, that did that. Right now would be the best time to list that online because we're going into Christmas season and that's where you want to be. Is when you're probably going to get the most between now and January. That stuff really dies down after January.
Wow. 815 says, I have a Dan Hampton football card.
Yeah.
Okay. Are football cards without them being signed worth anything? Because I feel like just cards in general, did they do anything? Because you always hear about like, oh, I've got Mickey Mantle card. But if they're not signed and like,
You want the whole set, really, to even try to get a decent value, unless they signed it. And then there's certain years. Obviously, you know, baseball does better than football for the most part. And baseball even has its bad years, you know.
I feel like I had that Hampton card. I feel like I had all those guys. That was like when you were collecting Tops. And Tops did football, I believe, too.
Yeah, they did. And what I collect are the McDonald's cards they did. They were more square instead of just a regular trading card size. And they had all the stats, you know, and Super Bowl year, of course.
I feel like with the Cubs World Series, was there a bunch of promotional stuff from McDonald's and company? Did they do the same thing?
Yeah, I don't know if
I feel like that's
fast
like
food got involved in it.
Like that's something from the past. Like if the Bears were good, if Cutler and the Bears were good for like 2 years, would Cutler be like, go get a Big Mac? No, I feel like they wouldn't do that. Like that, it's almost like that's an old kind of way of
and
doing
Jordan advertising. And Jordan with his burger, McDonald's burger that he
had. Where was Derrick Rose? Derrick Rose didn't get a da-da-ba-ba-ba. Yeah.
The only thing I remember is the cereal boxes with Rizzo and, you know, but I don't remember fast food.
Yeah, you'd think that Rizzo and Bryant would be perfect guys for a McDonald's commercial, right?
Yep.
Like, it feels like that's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
like
I don't recall that.
The guys who do McDonald's would be like, well, I was listening to this show.
Couldn't seal the deal on that.
And I was like, they came up with this brilliant out-of-the-box idea. What if we put Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo in a McDonald's commercial?
Well, the first question you have to ask them if you ever interview them is, what is your, like, signature burger? Like, what condiment do you put? And then have McDonald's, try to do that burger, right?
I'm not doing their job for them. Right. They get paid by the hour, those advertisers.
Right.
What about, like, the game, the in-game promotions? You know, like, every game, it's like they're giving away Beanie Babies or something like that. Because I find it interesting because we share season tickets. Mm-hmm. And, like, this one guy is like, you know, like, I'll take Monday, 120, April 14th. I'm like, why is he picking this?
Like,
because he's going for he's going for the specific giveaways. Yeah, do those end up being worth
anything?
Yeah,
some do. Same thing with Hawks, like the rally towels when they give those out. Those end up being worth something. But it's usually bobbleheads are the ones people want to be on the bobblehead night because they're
Are bobbleheads worth?
Yeah,
something?
I know. I sold a Konurko one recently for about $35-$40. So
does it have a goatee? It does.
Yeah, it's got the goatee.
I love the one. What was it a couple of years ago, like maybe 10, 12 years ago, that they had the ones they were doing for McDonald's, and it was an Urlacher, but they got recalled because it was lead based. Like it was like one of those, like, you remember that, like 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Urlacher, they had one for Urlacher, and I remember it was huge fervor because of the way it was made was one that you're like, you don't want to be licking that
thing. right.
Anyhow,
I don't recall. Man, I mean.
Anyway. All right, let's keep going here. 815 says, I've got this Buddy L truck. Curious what it's worth. It's probably from the late 70s, early 80s. A little toy truck.
Mm-hmm.
Dump truck.
Yeah, Buddy L is definitely collectible. They made so many different trucks and cars and even space shuttles, stuff like that they would make. If they're in use condition, they're like $15 and up.
Hmm.
If you have it in the box still, then great, even more. I saw the picture of what they sent in, and I'd probably put that at about 25-30 auction, still could get more, but
interesting.
That's what I would start that at.
773 says, I have a Deluxe Zero Megazord from Power Rangers, Zio, box, but used.
Yeah, if it's still in the box, that's going to be a few hundred dollars easily.
I mean,
yeah, that Megazord, the whole Transformer stuff, early stuff, can be $1,000, $2,000 for that stuff, especially in the box. I mean, to give you an idea, I sold a foot of a Transformer for $56. I found it in a quarter shoebox at a garage sale.
Like the old Transformer toys?
Yeah, and it was the die-cast instead of the plastic. And I recognized it as like a Transformer toy, but it was just the foot of it. And for a quarter, I threw it in my bag, and I ended up selling that thing for $56.
I've got that. You know what? We're in the money. Because I feel like that would be the collection of anything that's been left behind at my parents' house in a bin is all broken toys.
Yeah, do not throw that out. Bring it here.
All right.
We'll have an episode of sorting
this
out.
This would be our Geraldo Rivera
moment.
What's in Justin's
the vault.
Bin? Yeah, the vault. All right, let's go to Lulu. Lulu, what you want to brag about, Lulu?
Well, I was the one that texted in about the Blizzard thing I lost.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm sitting here thinking, and I know I have them. I just don't know where. But it's fast food memorabilia. The prizes the kids' toys.
Right, premium. Yes. Right. Yep.
Yeah, I have a set of the Jetsons in their cars, and it's the whole family and the dog Astro. And many, many years ago, I got them. I didn't get them appraised, but it was a show, kind of like what you guys are doing. They said they were worth like $5 a piece.
That's probably about right. Can you tell me again which chain you got it from? Do you remember? McDonald's?
Wendy's.
Okay, Wendy's.
Wendy's.
Yeah. Did
you get what do you order off of Wendy's menu? Going with a Frosty?
I used to be a manager for them, and I also called in a million years ago about I have a Where's the Beef game.
Oh, wow. Oh yes, I remember that. That's great.
I'm a Wendy's guy, too. I managed for 2 years at Wendy's, and I just sold a Where's the Beef puzzle for about $15. But, You're right, though. They're about $5. Even the McDonald's ones, you're lucky to get five. If they're even sealed, you're lucky to get five for them.
Well, you know, I just like them. I'm not going to sell them.
Yeah,
I just have to find them.
Didn't Wendy's, wasn't it a made-to-order kind of thing? Wasn't that your big thing in the 80s and 90s? Like, you guys were made to, or like, you make it fresh, or everyone else? Was that bogus?
Yeah,
they made it fresh back when.
Was it bogus, or is that real?
That was real.
No, that was
real.
Us.
You could tell us, guys. You don't have to be all party line now.
No. It was, and there was really kind of a hot and juicy campaign that I got ribbed about all the time. because I was a manager in the 80s, so that's quite a few years ago. But, crazy.
Same stuff. Here. I was about mid-late 80s, and
I
worked the big three, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's. Yeah. Management in each one, and Wendy's made it fresh. Burger King, for the most part, made it fresh. But McDonald's back in the day would have those bins.
As managers, do you have a different outfit? Do you get the tie?
Well, you get the tie or a white shirt where everyone else had the bad polyester uniform.
A little more comfort.
And those are worth money if you find the old polyester uniforms.
Oh, nice.
Anyway.
Yeah, when I started as a trainee, they made us wear these god-awful shirts and things for our hair. Yep. And as soon as they did the management, the whole region, switched the managers into shirts, sweaters, stuff like that.
Right.
So were definitely different.
Right. So we know who to complain to.
Yeah, right.
There's other stuff that I have in there. They had like fur balls. I can't even think of the other stuff. You guys have got me crazy now.
All right.
40 boxes of stuff in the storage bin.
Well, be ready for next week, Lulu. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
She's like me. I feel the same way. Every time I look at the bins in my garage, I'm like, I got to go through that for swap meet.
Yeah. It's...
All right. 312-981-7200. Let's keep going. 815 says, I bought a T-shirt in Denver, Colorado, July 1991. A Colorado Rockies entry. It was when they were just joining the MLB. Never worn. Worth anything.
It sure is if it was never worn. It all depends on the graphic. I'd have to see a picture. If it just says Colorado Rockies, just whatever the regular logo, but if it has other players on it or it does say like inaugural season, that would definitely raise it.
If it's got a Walt Weiss on it or maybe he was an A's. He's the coach there, but it had a Larry Walker on it.
Walker, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, that's the only name I can remember from the
An Andres Galarraga. He was on that original
team. There you go, yeah.
815 says from the Kokomo Glass Company, a 40-year-old plate. Yeah. And there's a picture of it. It's orange.
And for some reason, I couldn't find any Kokomo plates, but yeah.
Like Kokomo, like the song? Down in Kokomo, Aruba, Jamaica. four Ronald McDonald dinner plates from the late 70s, early 80s. Any value?
Yeah, those are 35 to 60 for like a lot of six of them. And as we discussed during the break, the old McDonald styrofoam containers that held like the six-piece nugget or a Big Mac, the styrofoam containers, are worth more than that. They're like $80. $80 for about a lot of 10 of them. But you get $80.
You'd have to find that stuff wholesale because if it's used, that's gross.
And I did find a sleeve of cups from McDonald's from back in the late 70s and sold it for $100. A sleeve of unused cups, but it had the old logo for back then.
I love the value system
Just people collect that stuff, yeah.
All right, Joy sent a picture of a 70s lamp. It's like a mid-modern kind of...
Oh, yeah, the eyeball lamp. They call those eyeball lamps. They made them on a stand where it could just be one that kind of protrudes from the back of like a recliner system. The one that they sent is kind of a stand with three of them on there, and that one goes for... anywhere from $50 to $250, depending on condition of it.
All right.
But that's mid-century modern stuff, and that's very hot
right
now.
Yeah, that gets it done. That's good. 224 says, I have a baseball mitt signed by Walter Payton.
Baseball?
What?
All right.
Does that ever work, like the anomaly stuff, where I have a football signed by Ryan
Sandberg? What was the other
one
we had that was kind of like that? Where it's mixed sports?
Yeah.
No, that could be a whole once a month segment we could do.
Let's get Janet on the line. Janet, what do you want to brag about, Janet?
Hi. I would never, ever, ever sell this. It means a lot to me because it was given to my husband by Dennis Savard.
Oh, okay.
And it's the a hanging of Dennis Savard, like a picture of Dennis Savard, the type of thing that hangs at the United Center.
Oh, I mean, like a banner?
Big, like a, yeah, but I mean, it's really big. I mean, it would only be like hung up like on a wall in a restaurant or something. But okay.
Is it like his number?
Dennis Savard, and I think there was only a couple of them that were available, and he gave one to my husband. My husband passed away 9 years ago, but Dennis meant a lot to my husband. My husband was his driver, actually.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. So, okay, well, that's great. That's an awesome brag, Janet. That's cool. That's cool to have that. That's something that is not shared by a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's one or two of a kind, so it's pretty rare.
Right.
You know, obviously, it's probably not anything you want to sell. But if you do, you know, you're probably in the $400 or $500 range to start, and you know, do an auction from there.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I never would. My husband would roll in his grave, and I would never do that. To kids, or my son-in-law, it'll go to them.
There you go.
That's awesome.
Good plan. Okay. Thanks, Janet.
Thanks for calling.
All right, good stuff. I like that one. 1987 tollway map, signed by Walter Payton.
Nice.
We should just do a segment on what did Walter Payton sign.
Right. Payton's signature, yeah.
That must be like, I've got something in the car. Walter Payton's in the jewel.
Yeah.
I've got to get him to sign this. What do we have? What do we have? I have this tollway map. Yeah, it's fine.
I got a funny story. I met Bono one time, and a guy walked up in the group of people, and he was signing stuff. And a guy walked up and had nothing to sign. He actually picked up off the ground a Little Debbie's Nutty Butter, like, box and handed it to Bono to sign, and he looked at it and then he signed it and gave it back to him. Like, cool.
It's so funny, like the like just what we do when a celebrity's around trying to get us.
Yeah, right. How many times you hear the napkin story? Yeah, you know, sign the napkin.
Right. So. Sign this napkin.
Yeah.
All right. So that's good. I mean, I think that's gonna shut it off because we're right at the time where we gotta close it down. So I apologize. There's probably about 5-6 more that I haven't gotten to tonight. We'll get to it next time. We're off next week, but we'll return after Labor Day. Greg Flamm at DuPage, Facebook and Twitter. You can find him there. Greg, always a pleasure. Great job tonight.
Awesome. Thanks.